Tracy Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Now, last night, this was so exciting, Wendy. I don't know if you're aware of what went on last night in Evanston. At Welsh Ryan Arena, listen to this. This is the kind of thing that you hear about and you go, that's impossible. But this is what went on at Welsh Ryan Arena. Warren Beatty announces that Michigan is the winner of the big basketball game between Northwestern and Michigan. And then at the last minute, they realize he got the wrong envelope. Northwestern won the game.
They came out and they said, this is not a joke.
This actually
happened.
And Denzel Washington was shocked, and The Rock was shocked, and Nicole Kidman was shocked. Dave, I know when you go into the profession of sportscasting, when you're going to call games, you dream about a finish like this. And I'm sure in your career you've had others, but last night was as exciting a finish as you could ever imagine.
I've had some that have gone the other way, have gone against Northwestern over the years. I've seen some shots at the buzzer that have gone in. I've seen them win games on shots with, I don't know, 2 or 3 seconds to go, and then there's a timeout, so there's a little bit of a lull.
Yeah.
I've never seen one where they threw the ball 94 feet from one end of the floor to the other, and a guy lays it in at the buzzer.
Beautiful.
I mean, there was only one place they could really throw the ball.
Yeah.
And it's a play that, and Joey Meyer said afterwards, he said, you could try that 10 times and maybe hit it once.
Yeah.
But probably not. And even if you do, are you going to get the shot off in time? I mean, so much had to go right.
Everything went right. So that was, they called for that play, right?
Yes.
That just didn't happen. They said, let's try, even though it's a long shot, let's try it and see. And boy, did it work.
Well, it was interesting that Chris Collins told us on the postgame show that one of the assistant coaches said, we want to get to overtime now, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just want to get the ball inbound safely and let's get to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them a chance to win it with 1.7 seconds to go. And Chris said, no, we're going for it. We got to go and try to win the game. And that's what they did.
Wow. I love the morning after voice.
Well, there isn't much
very
left.
Sexy.
Aside from calling the game, you then screamed and shouted and screamed and shouted because how could you hold back?
Well, you couldn't hear part of it. I mean, it was so loud in there, and it's been loud, and it was just a sense. And obviously, there were some Michigan fans there, but even they, I think, appreciated what was just a great college basketball game.
Yeah.
But just the unbridled joy that you saw on the faces of the players, the students, and these players, and you have to keep it in perspective. These kids on Saturday night had a 7-point lead at Indiana with 1:30 to go and lost on a 3-point play with 2 seconds left. Then had a half court shot that hit off the rim that would have won it for.
Mm-hmm.
And so they walked out of there, got on the plane. We flew home Saturday night. They were devastated.
Yeah.
And thinking, you know, there are a lot of people doubting them and thinking things are slipping away from them now. And this elusive NCAA tournament bid, they're so close, but it's just not quite there. And then to see them play the way they played last night, the way both teams played, but to see them get the success at the end, you couldn't help but be happy for them.
So just for people who don't know, you called it elusive, and it has been beyond elusive. Northwestern has never been in the NCAA tournament even once.
And it really hasn't been all that close on Selection Sunday when they're handing out the bids. I mean, there was one year they thought kind of maybe, possibly, if things go right. Because a lot can happen in these conference tournaments, but it hasn't happened. And now, barring something really crazy, I can't imagine what that would be, they got to be in.
When the moment happens, and you did this beautifully yesterday, I mean, your job is, of course, to call the game, but then what happened was so out of the ordinary, and all you could do is just be honest and paint the picture of what's happening, and you did you always do, but boy, last night was amazing.
Well, it was an amazing play,
and
the thing is, you want to kind of keep track of where the ball is because it gets up in the air, and there's lights, and everybody's on their feet and yelling, and So I walked into a restaurant afterwards, and somebody said, "Here, can you recreate what you said?" I said, "I don't have a clue what I said. I don't know what I said. I didn't hear it till I got home last night." So I had no idea what I had said.
But you know how kids growing up, you fantasize about it being two outs in the World Series and the bases loaded, and you dream about taking that swing. When you do what you do for a living, last night's the reason you do it. You want those moments, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the kind of thing you think about. And I've listened back to him and said, "Boy, I wish I'd said this. Wish I'd said this."
What do you wish you had said? What didn't you say that you wanted to say?
Well, I wanted to say, "Well, I think this is going to work. This play, I believe that Nate's going to throw it to Derek at the other end, and Derek is going to just turn and lay it in, and the Wildcats are going to win." I wish I'd said that.
Yeah.
I stumbled a little bit on part of it. I mean, it's never perfect, but
that's real life.
I got the point. You know, they're not, as Pat Hughes always told me, and as always said, they're live broadcasts.
Yes.
You don't get a chance to rehearse them.
Yep, so
you know,
true. Pat Hughes once said to me, "Use the word trousers a lot." So I'm trying to use the word trousers more often. All right, so it's Bill and Wendy. Dave is sticking around for just a little bit. Some very interesting news about one of our favorite White Sox players.
Very weird.
Very strange.
Strange.
Let's take a quick break.
His appetite?
His appetite. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dave Ennett is sitting in with us. Bill and Wendy, there's a lot going on in the world of sports right now. Number one is the strange appetites of one Jose Abreu of the Chicago White Sox. What was he eating on a plane, Dave?
A part of a passport.
Part of his passport.
Did they run out of peanuts?
Yes. Explain from the beginning.
This is so weird.
Why was Jose Abreu eating his passport on the airplane?
Well, he was testifying in this trial. These two men are on trial in Miami, accused of illegally smuggling Cuban ball players into the United States so they could make money on these players signing contracts.
Yeah.
And so Jose testified yesterday that he had eaten part of a passport because it's really a strange thing. But he's on the plane, and he said he could not go into the United States with a falsified passport.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking.
And he said he ate a chunk of a fake passport to cover up his illegal travel. He said he ordered a beer on a flight from Haiti to Miami, and he ate the page from the passport, which had a false name and his picture.
Yeah.
He was worried. He said he had to get here to the United States so he could sign this big contract with the White Sox.
Yeah.
So that's what he did.
And he passed through customs to get on the plane, and then technically, what do you need the passport for? Fiber?
Yes, for fiber. Now, would the passport pass through customs easier or through Jose Abreu? Which do you think?
With no real experience in that area, I couldn't tell you. He said he ordered a Heineken to wash it down.
Sure. That makes sense.
He used the beer to help him swallow the first page of his passport little by little after takeoff.
And, you know, it's a bizarre story, but it does sort of show the great lengths and difficulties that these Cuban players had to get here.
Yeah.
And that wasn't probably not the worst part of his travels. I mean, you're on these boats. There's it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You're putting your life at stake. And it was not an easy ordeal for him to go through. And you know, thankfully, he made it in one piece and was able to get through it.
Because our relationship with Cuba has changed over the last year, is it still difficult for players, Cuban-born players, to play in the United States, or is that not an issue anymore?
I think it's less difficult now, but I think it's still, everything's kind of evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out.
Now he's playing. He's back.
He's playing. Yeah, he testified again this morning in Miami, and now he's on his way back to Arizona. He's not charged with anything.
Although he is here illegally, if you're looking at it, but since he's cooperating with the case that they're trying to get these dudes who smuggled him, it appears that they're giving him...
Well, he's not here illegally.
Well, if he came on a false passport...
But that's been cleared up, right, Dave? I think he is now here. He's considered to be legal.
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, okay,
so, yeah.
So that, this was a while ago that he did this.
He is not at risk
right.
of being deported or anything.
Yeah.
But the two men on trial who were benefiting from these players
are. Yeah, that's
a
shame.
Dave, last year we learned that a member of the White Sox, actually at the time a former member, Adam LaRoche, was not only playing for the White Sox, but he was a spy on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed, I was going to say hard to swallow, but in light of what we know about
different choice words.
Abreu, let's not. So what's going on with the White Sox that the guys on the team seem to be involved sometimes in extracurricular?
Well, I don't know. I think espionage is much more widespread Major League Baseball than we know. I think every team has some players. I haven't seen the breakdown or the percentages.
So most teams will carry one spy or two spies coming out of spring training.
Well, you usually carry two catchers,
yeah.
11 pitchers maybe early in the year, and two spies.
And a couple spies.
Yes.
I spy with my little eye.
It is weird, but I think it's, in this case, it's just, then the whole thing happened with his kid in spring training. But it does seem like there's some strange story every year in spring training
for the
White Sox.
Doesn't it? It does. And then really quickly, one last thing. Bears fans in town have been hoping crazily that Jimmy Garoppolo would be coming to the Bears. But
it
doesn't look like it's going to happen, does it?
Well, I was kind of wondering all along why, as good as Tom Brady still is and potentially wants to play for several more years, he was suspended this year, but
he has
been heard. You need a backup, and look, the Bears know that better than any team.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was never convinced. Now he wanted to come to the Bears apparently.
He's
if he was
going
to go anywhere. He's from Arlington Heights, and so it made sense if he was going to go, and if they were willing to trade him, this made sense. But I never really believe they were just going to say, oh, yeah, sure, he's not going to play here because Brady's going to go on forever, so here, take him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just didn't make a lot of sense. Now, things change, and they could have a change of heart and still trade him. But
well, the other day they were talking about how Cleveland wants to trade them a 12th-round draft. It would be a first round, but they get the 12th pick. Mm-hmm. And New England was looking at that going, oh, that's not bad. And I'm saying to myself, wouldn't you rather get the 3rd pick in the draft than the 12th? But then New England kind of rescinded and said, well, we really don't think we want to move
or
on.
Maybe they're bargaining. Maybe they're looking for leverage.
Yeah,
so
could be.
That does happen, too.
Could be.
Perhaps, though, that it got out so much. I believe Adam Hoge started that whole rumor. And now I feel like, they got wind of it and said, we're not letting them go.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Adam.
I know.
Others.
Been a crescendo.
Yes.
Right. There has. Dave, an exciting night for you last
Congrats.
Night for all of us as Northwestern came out of nowhere at the last second for that buzzer beater. Very exciting call, so thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
Really
it's going to be a fun
it.
Couple weeks.
Yep, it will be. That's Dave Ennett. We're Bill and Wendy. More show ahead. Stick around. It's WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And March is colorectal cancer awareness month. And our next guest, Dr. Anita Spies, is on with us to urge you, Bill, to get your colonoscopy.
I know.
Spies is a gastroenterologist with North Shore University Health System. Hi, Dr. Spies.
Good morning.
All right. It's not that hard to get your, what's it called, colonoscopy.
Right. You could probably do it over the phone for me, couldn't you, Doctor? There's no reason you couldn't.
Yeah, no preparation.
All right.
All right. I had, I don't know when I'm due for one. I had both at the same time. I figured since I was under, why not go for
it?
So
all done.
Colonoscopy and endoscopy. These are very important and can actually save our lives, can't they?
That is for sure. Colorectal cancer is important because it is the second leading cause of cancer death in the United States. And there is an asymptomatic precancerous detectable stage, which is a colon polyp. So screening can detect, remove the polyps at the same time, and thereby decreasing colorectal cancer incidence and mortality.
And they say, ideally, you want to go in for your first one about 50, and then it's every 5 years thereafter?
Every 10 years, actually.
Oh, every 10 years.
See, just go.
That's not bad. I should go. I'm going to go.
You've been saying...
No, I know.
Bill has been saying this for a couple years, actually.
You know, so many people come up with excuses. I think it's, you know, they're afraid of the procedure. They're worried that it'll be painful. You're sedated for it, so you shouldn't really feel anything. I think the worst part, and you've probably heard this from other people, is
it's the prep work.
Everybody says that, and it's true,
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Although it is so true.
Dr. Spies, I would like to ask you this question, because I guess it's been quite a while since I've had one, because I took the pills, which I understand are no longer being used.
That's correct. There were some risks associated with the pills.
Yeah, like getting a new toilet.
Oh.
So the current most common laxative is a liquid. And here at North Shore, we have you drink about 2 liters the night before. And then if you're still not clean by the morning, you drink the other, you know, 2 liters or half a gallon.
My husband had one recently, and I, you know, I explained to him, oh, my God, don't leave the house. You're going to have to be near a bathroom all the time. And honestly, with this new liquid that he did, it was just, as you mentioned, 2 containers of it. And it was not a problem for
really?
Him.
All right. That's encouraging.
Yeah.
And the best part about it, and you would maybe agree with me on this, Dr. Spies, is going out for breakfast afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. I always tell people before they go to sleep, I say, dream of what you want to eat when you wake up.
Because the day before is just, it's fasting and then going to the bathroom, so you're pretty cleaned out.
That's right. Yeah, you're on a liquid diet the day before, and then you have to drink the laxative. And you can drink additional liquid while you're drinking the laxative. So I usually tell people to drink, like, Gatorade or Propel water, something's flavored to try to get that taste out of your mouth.
Good idea there.
But please tell people why not red Gatorade.
Because it looks like blood.
Oh.
And
so do not do
that
it.
In the colon.
No, you do not. No, you do not. So ideally, you would take a day off of work for this or 2 days off of work for this?
One day.
Just one day?
You could still be on your liquid diet while you're on the radio the day before.
Yeah. And with the doctors that are performing this, because I know you're out, how much pointing and laughing goes on in the operating room? Is there a lot of that?
No, not at all.
All right.
All right. Ryan Burrow is up in the newsroom, and he has a question for you. Dr. Anita Spies with us, gastroenterologist with North Shore University Health System. Ryan?
Doctor, I don't know if you've seen this. It was published, I guess, earlier this week in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, saying that actually it seems like the Gen Xers and the millennials are showing increased risk for colon and rectal cancers. Have you followed this at all, or do you have any explanation for why that would be?
Yeah, I saw that article as well, and even the epidemiologists who wrote the paper were a bit stumped by that. They gave a few potential, you know, or possible theories about it. One is that it might be diet-related. In our Western diet of high fat, low fiber, that might be associated with the development. It could be obesity. It could be that people are getting checked more at a younger age just because they're more vigilant about their health. So if they have any change, they may be getting colonoscopy sooner, so we're detecting it more. And then it may also be that colonoscopies in people over 50 have really substantially reduced the development of colorectal cancer. So you're seeing it less in over 50s and more in younger.
That's
How about
wild.
That? Yeah.
I thought maybe it had something to do with cell phones or, you know, you never know if it's or maybe the kind of food we're eating versus the food that was eaten in the 60s and 70s.
But we were doing more family dinners, I believe, years ago when we were growing up, where you'd have your vegetables and it'd be a more of a well-balanced, at least at dinner time. I know a lot of the younger people are grabbing stuff on the fly or going out to eat all the time. That might have something to do with it.
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point. You know, what's the additives? What's in the food that we're eating now? I mean, there's so many variables, I think, here.
Doctor, there's at least one company, one that I know of for sure, that does these. It's almost like a colonoscopy, but they do it through the mail. Do you know what I mean?
M-A-L-E.
M-A-I-L. You know what I mean, right? You send in a sample.
What?
It's true.
Right.
Is that as thorough? It can't be as thorough, can it?
Actually, they're quite good at detecting colon cancer. So they're looking for DNA and in the stool. So you send the stool sample, and they look for DNA. And it's very good at picking up DNA from cancer. But it's not as good as picking up DNA from a polyp.
Okay.
So you don't want to wait until you have cancer and then the DNA is picked up, because then the horse is out of the barn.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to get it at the colon polyp stage, and those tests aren't quite as good at that.
All right. I also want to point out, you want to make sure you got the mailing address right when you're sending that in. Because the people at Columbia House are furious with me.
No, I thought you were sending me a Christmas card, but it was something else.
No, I apologize. I still feel bad about that.
All right. So here's a question, too. You mentioned the DNA, and once cancer has already set in, the whole point of a colonoscopy is to catch this before cancer happens. So the success rate is pretty great, isn't it?
Yes. So, and that's where the laxative preparation is so important, because the cleaner that the colon is, the better the gastroenterologist has at seeing the lining of the colon and detecting any polyp. Most polyps are millimeters in size, so, the better the preparation, the better we can get a good look at the colon, remove the polyp if it's found, and, as I said earlier, substantially reducing the risk of developing colon cancer.
There's no reason not to.
No,
do it.
I'm with you.
I'll take you out to
it's
breakfast.
Time. No, you don't have to do that. I'll get this done by the end of the year. I will have this done. I promise you.
All right, Paula has a question. Paula, this is Dr. Anita Spies from North Shore University Health System. You had a question.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I understand that once you're in there with the traditional colonoscopy, you can keep the polyp. But I've also heard about a virtual one, which for cowards might be sound like an advantage. And if there is trouble, you'll come back later, even if it's a week later.
Huh.
So what do you want to tell me about virtual ones?
Sure. So a virtual colonoscopy is a type of CAT scan or CT scan that's done in the radiology department. And what they do is they take little sections or slices, pictures throughout your abdomen, and then they put those slices together and make it look like you're flying through the colon. So remember those old cartoon or comic books we had, and at the upper right, you flip through it and it looks like the person is running? They kind of do that. They make all these slices, put them together, and it looks like you're going through the colon. The problem with those procedures, there's a few problems. One is that you still have to drink the laxative prep, which is still the worst part of either procedure. The second thing is that if a polyp or some kind of lesion is detected on that virtual colonoscopy, you still need a colonoscopy. You still need a regular colonoscopy.
So you'll have to do that prep work all again.
All again. And the third
That's the worst part of it, Paula.
And the third thing is that it's pretty expensive, and not all insurance carriers will cover it.
Mm-hmm. The virtual one, regular colonoscopy, you're covered normally, right?
Right, and with the Affordable Care Act, the colonoscopy is usually covered.
Look at that!
All right,
is it offered in this area? Do you know?
Is it offered in this area?
Which?
The virtual one.
Oh yes, most radiology departments at larger institutions offer it. Yes.
I feel a radio contest coming up. Maybe Paula and Bill could go together.
That'd be fun. Are you in, Paula? I'll do it.
Don't say, are you in?
All right.
Paula, thank you very much.
Never lost a caller quicker than that. We just broke a record.
It's funny we goof around about this because we act like 12-year-olds sometimes, but it's really not that bad. And I think just talking about it, people might be thinking, you know what? It's time. It's not just for men. It's not just for women. And when is the age you're supposed to get a colonoscopy? And I know that depends on family history as well.
Right. So if there is a strong family history of colon polyps or colon cancer, we start screening at age 40 or 10 years before the person who had colon polyps or colon cancer was diagnosed. So if you had a family member, a parent, or a sibling who was 40, then you would start at age 30. Otherwise, if you don't have the risk factors, you start at age 50.
All right.
Have you gotten any cease and desist from Colin Powell since you talk about colon polyp? It's just so close.
No.
All right, good to know.
Dr. Spies, thanks for not hanging up on us, by the way. That's the thing we appreciate the most about you.
All right, I think we have time for one final question, because once we start talking about it, it's weird. The floodgates open, and people really are curious about this. I know I got to be careful what I say.
Yeah, that's a weird way to describe it.
No pun intended, right?
Right. Mike, you're our last question. Dr. Anita Spies on the line with us, gastroenterologist with North Shore University Health System.
Yes, hello. I'm 35 now, and I had a partial, like a lower intestine colonoscopy a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I have a situation where I go to the restroom quite a bit.
Okay.
Like, I eat, I have to go to the restroom. And she said she didn't find anything except for a lot of internal hemorrhoids.
Okay.
But I still have all these issues.
So should he go back and get a second opinion?
Well,
no,
you know,
I mean, it was hard to get to talk with the doctor to begin with.
So if you're asking if this is necessarily a sign of anything, most of the time the overall opinion is that there really isn't a particular symptom with colorectal cancer. So whether you're going to the bathroom a lot or a little is not necessarily a sign of anything bad or good. So you really should see your gastroenterologist, your primary care physician, talk about it and see whether you have risk factors or concerns about your symptoms that would necessitate doing another colonoscopy.
Okay. Yeah, I've been concerned because my father, he's actually dying from colon cancer. As we speak.
Yeah.
So
you would be the kind of person that would have screening at an earlier age. And we also say that if the parent or sibling was less than 60, rather than going the every 10 years, you would go every 5 years.
Okay.
Mike, good luck with this. And sorry about your dad.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Mike. Isn't there something called, and I'm probably saying it wrong, but like a peristaltic wave or something, that some people that eat something, it goes right through them?
Yeah. We won't get into the whole physiology of the GI tract, but yes, when you eat, the peristalsis is the movement that pushes the food through.
So that might be something that he should talk to his doctor about, too. And hemorrhoids don't equate to colorectal cancer, do they?
Correct. They're a benign but annoying condition.
Perfect. I think we've learned a lot. And, Bill, if you don't go by the end of the year, Dr. Anita Spies is
going
to pick you up and drive you there.
I don't want that.
That's right.
I don't need that. I'll go. You've talked me into it, Dr. Spies. Thank you for that.
I'm glad.
Okay. Yeah. And what is a good website to go for to get in touch with you or to find out more about colorectal cancer as we March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Where's the best website?
So Northshore.org, is the North Shore website. There's different websites like the American Society of Gastroenterology. There are many different websites.
And you can just Google it and find some information,
absolutely.
But make an appointment for sure, people. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for putting up with us.
And get your colonoscopy, Bill.
All right. Done deal.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Dr. Anita Spies, gastroenterologist with North Shore University Health System, northshore.org is the website to go to.
I'm going. I'm not just saying that. This year, this is the year. I've been saying
that for 3 years.
This is the year. I promise you. By the end of the year, I will have gone in.
I'm just trying to edit myself because I wanted to say, oops, the website's going down.
No, you can't say that. Please don't say that. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're like little kids. I can't look at you because
right.
I don't want to make you laugh.
No, too late.
Right. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Was it Katie Couric who...
Her husband. She lost her husband to that.
And then she did her colonoscopy live on the air. Well, you couldn't see anything other than, I think, internal.
Right. That's right. Yep.
It looked like the infrastructure.
It did kind of, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah.
It's really not that bad. You got to go.
I'm going.
And George, you have to convince Bill to go get his colonoscopy.
I think he should because I had colon cancer twice. Once in 1994. And they...
How old were you the first time?
And the second time was 2014. They took out about 20 inches of colon both times. It was stage two both times.
Ugh. How you doing now?
I'm doing great. That was, you know, 2014. I'm hanging in there. My digestive system's a mess, but other than that. But I would encourage you really to go and get that sooner rather than later. The first time I had had chemotherapy with it, and maybe they do it different now, I don't know, but they used to stick needles in my arm.
Oh, no.
Oh, see, he's worried about you and your
needles.
I would
not be good with that.
You gotta do that, though. I heard that you don't want to have anything to do with the needles.
And you had no symptoms at all, George? This just kind of, what happened?
Well, the first time, the symptom that I might have had was it felt like I had a feeling like I ate too much sweet corn. And I had that funny feeling like I ate more sweet corn than I should have. And it was during the fall, and I quit eating sweet corn. I still had that feeling.
I've never had that feeling once in my life. How did you know that it would be sweet corn you had too much of?
Well, that's...
It comes out in your, you know...
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh.
You've never eaten corn?
But I didn't eat any sweet corn, and I still had that feeling. And I told the doctor, I said, I had that. I just got that feeling. And I had a colonoscopy before that, and they apparently didn't find anything about a year before. And then he did a barium x-ray and found 6 inches of cancer in that.
Oh, my God.
First time, yeah.
And how old were you when this first happened to you, George?
I'm 85 now. So back then I was probably 60-something, 62 maybe, somewhere in there. So 59, 60, somewhere in there.
And you had never had a colonoscopy prior to that?
I had a colonoscopy before that. They had taken out polyps, and the polyps, when they see a polyp, they snip them off, and then they do a check on whether they're cancerous or not.
Right. Well, continued success. Stay away from that sweet corn.
I'm a survivor twice. So
that's
I'm
awesome.
You know, it's like Groundhog Day. And I had it in 1994, and 20 years later, I had a colonoscopy with no symptoms whatsoever in 2014. And it would happen to be right around the same time of the year, right around Thanksgiving, and I had no symptoms whatsoever. And I thought, I'll go in for this colonoscopy, and I couldn't believe it, that there it was again. And I had another surgery where they took out another 4 or 5 inches.
We're so glad you've beaten it twice, George.
No, they took out more than 4 or 5 inches, but the cancer part of it was in about 4 or 5 inches of it.
Well, continued success. It's a definite survivor story. We appreciate you calling.
You got to do it. It's if they catch
I'm doing it.
The stage 3 or 4, you got a good chance of making it.
All right, I'm doing it.
Thanks so much, George. And real quickly, Mary, we only have a minute here, but you went with your husband to get a colonoscopy?
I went because my husband was going. His doctor was sending them, and I said, well, as long as you're going, I might as well go too. So I went. He was fine. The doctor came out and said, you need surgery. And I went, surgery? Why? Well, it was Easter. I had to make dinner. I couldn't go for surgery. I said, what, in about 6 months? He said, no, in about a week.
Wow.
And then, they moved like, about 30 inches of my colon, which you got a lot of it, I guess, you know. And that was stage 3, and that was in 06, and I'm fine. So.
Well, you owe this to your husband.
Yeah.
it really played out that way, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and now so I'm not going to kill him now. I just
good. That's
Thank
good
you,
news.
Mary. Continued success and congrats for beating cancer.
Thank you, and everybody do this because I had no symptoms either. So
how about that?
Thank you, Mary. Are you convinced yet?
I'm convinced.
Every year you've said, "Oh, this is the year on my birthday."
This year I'm going in.
I'm telling you right now, if you don't, I'm taking you.
No, I'm going in this year.
That should make you want to go anyway. Oh, my God. Is Wendy here?
I can't honk, Wendy
honk.
There.
Come on, Bill.
I'm going in. That honking noise was from the horn, right?
Yes.
Good. We'll take a quick break and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Thrilled that you're listening, and if you want to jump in at any point, 312-981-7200 is your best bet.
And thanks to Elif Garris, who is our producer today, because Kevin Richter is on vacay. He just took a vacation last week.
He's high maintenance.
What, did he have to go get new hair gel somewhere?
I don't know where he had to go. No, he went to California. It's out west.
They have hair gel there. Yeah, Lots of it.
There's plenty of hair gel. If people are listening and you need hair gel and you can't find any, California, go to California. Hey, you know who might be our next president? This is exciting.
Well, I know Kanye mentioned that he wanted to run.
Right. He was saying he was going to run.
Donald Trump will probably run again.
Could be. Too early to tell. Remember Oprah Winfrey? She was the host of the, what was the name of her show?
I believe it started with an O.
It was the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Ah!
And I saw her on the cover of O Magazine recently.
She was on the cover?
Yeah.
Just that one issue?
Yeah. They wanted to mix things up a little bit, so they
subscribed.
Oprah on there. Were you a subscriber to Oprah
recently?
Magazine?
Yeah, there was some Groupon for $5 for the year.
Oh,
and
really?
I know, I had to do it.
That's a bargain. Now, there was a time where Oprah was hands down probably the most popular, certainly the most popular talk show host on television, and possibly the most popular
woman in the world. She probably was at one point.
Yeah. I think
she was Oprah spanned the globe.
Right.
She gave out cars.
Yeah, she would give people cars.
Did you get a car?
I did not get a car. Oh. Wendy?
No.
Did you get one, Ryan?
Can I tell you?
That might help with votes.
I still love Oprah. I mean, I loved
her
and watched her show all the time.
Yeah.
And then I really stopped watching her show, but I still love Oprah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to be honest. If you look at what she did a lot of good. And one of the things, I mean, she did a bunch of good. She helped all these people in Africa, you know, these girls who didn't have a school. She built a school for them in Africa. There were some problems with the school, not Oprah's fault. But also, like, there was a time where reading was on the decline. And Oprah said, we're going to start a book club. I want to get America to read again. And it worked.
And now everybody has book clubs.
Yeah.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Because a lot of the women that I know who are in book clubs don't finish the book and they just go for cocktails and apps.
Right. You drink a little wine.
Have some appetizers.
Maybe the book will come up. Maybe it won't. Sometimes it doesn't.
I love Oprah.
Yeah. Well, and now she's thinking about running for president. Here's the story. This is out of the Chicago Tribune. It no longer seems like such a fanciful idea. The queen of daytime TV is saying, before President Donald Trump was elected, I never even considered the question, even a possibility, Oprah told Bloomberg's David Rubenstein in a clip that was published on Wednesday. But after Trump won, Winfrey said, I just thought, oh, when Rubenstein.
Good Oprah, by the way.
Paraphrasing.
Oh, that's what she says. She even talks like that.
It even says it in regular type, and then it says it in italics, which says to me, at that point, she means business. She wasn't just throwing the word "oh" out for Oprah. When Rubenstein made a mocking reference to Trump's lack of government experience, Winfrey then added, "That's what I thought. I don't have the experience. I don't know enough. And now I'm thinking." And then she said "oh" again. Actor Jamie Foxx. Actress and Democratic Party activist Eva Longoria are among the stars who have previously said that they would vote for Oprah Winfrey if she were to run for president. Left-wing filmmaker Michael Moore has been calling on her to do this since 2003.
He's like a pesky little gnat flying
Michael
around
Moore?
Your head, isn't
sometimes,
he?
Sometimes, yeah.
He's always in it.
He likes the trouble.
Yep.
He likes to be near the trouble. Winfrey, age 63, said at that time, back in 2003, that she was certain that she would never run for office. But then people say never, she told reporters back in 2003. But I can say never. But since then, she has campaigned for President Barack Obama. She has supported Hillary Clinton's presidential bid. You can add her to the list of possible 2020 celebrity contenders who have not ruled out running. That list includes Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
What? Oh, my God. Is Kevin Hart going to be vice president?
He would be an interesting president. And Kanye West, who we mentioned before.
Okay, I just have to say something. It sounds ludicrous when you say that Oprah could be president.
Sure.
But really, look at the similarities between she and Donald Trump in the sense where she's a fantastic business person.
Right.
She's done a lot of charity work. I mean, it's not that out of the question.
What we've learned in all this is that anything can happen, even with the presidency. We all chuckled when Donald Trump threw his head into the ring because that was impossible. He cannot be president. But then he is the president, so what do we know? Anyone can be president. It could be Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It could be.
All right, this is setting a terrible precedent because, you know, there are sometimes, again, the last speech to Congress, the first speech to Congress that President Trump made.
Yeah.
I felt a little encouraged, more so than I had in the past.
Yeah.
Tough to believe what he said. I'd like to see it all come to fruition and then we'll all be happy.
Right.
But it's. In a way, when he was elected, I'm like, what are other countries thinking of us where, you know, this television star is the president? Now, next president is the first female president, Oprah Winfrey.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. And then the next term, it would be Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I mean, this is just like, is this a movie that we're involved in or is this real life?
I still remember when Arnold Schwarzenegger said, I'm going to run for governor. He said it with much more of a pronounced accent. I'm going to run for governor of California. And people tittered and chuckled and
yeah.
went, no, you're not, because you're the Terminator. And the Terminator can't be the governor of California. It doesn't play that way. And then he was the governor.
And did a decent job, didn't he?
I guess so. There's people that are mixed. Some people think he did a great job. Some people don't think so. But to the same extent, if you look at Ronald Reagan's career arc, you would say, well, Ronald Reagan's never going to be president. He's a B-movie actor. Those guys don't get to be the president of the United States, but he was. So
why did it take so long for another movie star to come along?
Right. Dwayne The Rock Johnson isn't just a B-movie star. He's the highest paid actor. Even that, you can put that in the category of what? The highest paid actor in the world is The Rock, is Dwayne Johnson.
If I were aliens from another planet, I would blow us up.
Right.
I mean, listen to what
right.
you just said. In
right.
the world, he's the highest paid actor?
In the world. No actor makes more money acting, with the air quotes, than Dwayne Johnson does. You pick your favorite well-established actor who's done his time, you know, learning Shakespeare and been on the stage and been on Broadway and has worked his way up to be an actor. And then Dwayne Johnson was he was a wrestler. He was a professional wrestler, and now he's the highest paid actor in the world.
What has happened to the world?
But it does show you, and I guess this is good, that anything can happen. Is that good? I guess it is.
I like Anything Can Happen Day on SpongeBob episodes.
Right.
That's
not
when
in real
I like.
Life.
Yeah.
Not in real life.
All right. Ted wants to talk about Oprah's cabinet. You have some ideas?
Yeah. You know, before the cabinet, I just thought of the campaign slogan. It's
what is it?
All about the O.
I love it.
Yeah. Although, shoot, there might be a little bit of a lawsuit going on there. But,
that's
you know,
right.
Yeah, but... Hey, as long as we're going with movie actors, you know, there was a particular individual that didn't get a shot in the Trump administration. Maybe it will work out fine for the Department of Education for Oprah. That'd be Gary Busey.
Yeah, why wouldn't you get Gary Busey involved?
He's in charge of schools?
Well, it'd be real life, man.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I like it.
Get those aliens with the laser beam focused right on them.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
Anybody else on the cabinet you could think of? You know, Gail King would have some position.
She'd be on there. Yeah.
Stedman? No.
Maybe.
She likes to keep him in the rearview mirror.
Right, right.
They would be on Air Force Two and getting out of town because he knows what's coming.
Ted, you have a great day. Thank you so much.
You too, guys. You bet.
Some more calls, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. This week on Chicago's Best, whether you're a sports fan or not, get your game face on. It's Chicago's Best Sports Bars, Sunday night at 10 on WGN.
All right, how about this for possibility? President Winfrey. What if Oprah Winfrey ran for president? How would she do? She's considering it. She said about a little over a decade ago, no, she would never run for president. Now she's rescinding. She has seen that Donald Trump has become a very unlikely, unexpected president. And she goes, maybe it's time for me to run for president.
They're not that dissimilar. I know one's a man, one's a woman, and the characters are different. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody kind of wanted, let's get a businessman in there who knows how, you know, run the country like a business,
right.
Which I don't know if that's the right answer.
She would run it like a talk show. Maybe she'd run it like a talk show. She'd have Nate Berkus in for some reason. To tell us how we could decorate the country and make it look nicer.
I'd be all for that.
Forget about the infrastructure. Throw pillows, he would say. We need more throw pillows.
Barry, you're laughing. We caught you laughing.
What's the idea? So here, okay, for Surgeon General for President Oprah is going to be Dr. Oz.
Oh, yeah. That's excellent. Yeah.
And the head of Health and Human Services will have to be Dr. Phil.
Yep. I love that.
She's got all the doctor friends. She's got the decorator. She's got a chef. She can be in charge. I can't remember his name. Art Smith.
Oh, Art Smith. Yeah.
He could run, you know, I don't know.
We'll find
dinners.
Something for him. Yeah, in charge of dinner.
You got to put Stedman somewhere, too. So.
Well, Wendy's theory is she likes him kind of out of the way. He doesn't want to be too big of an influence.
Right. He's not really, you know, involved too much in her comings and goings.
Well, he's stealth, but he's there.
Good.
Okay. Stealthman.
Department of Defense.
Yes.
All right. We've got this figured out.
Thanks,
Barry. All right. We forgot about someone. I don't know if it was intentional or not. But, Kevin, there's another film star that made the switch to politics.
Yeah, that was Jesse Ventura. We forgot about him, governor of Minnesota.
Right.
Now, how did he fare? Because people liked him, too, didn't he?
Minnesota, I'm guessing, is a liberal state. But he did well, I'm guessing, his first term. But they didn't reelect him, so... That should tell us something.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good point.
Minnesota, also the same state that has Al Franken involved in politics. So
they're open
to anything.
So there you go.
Yep. Why isn't he toying with running for president?
There was a brief moment where they were thinking about him. He may have been on the list as potential vice president for Hillary Clinton. It didn't pan out, obviously, but wouldn't have been terrible. Kevin, thank you.
Yeah.
I still can't get past Stuart Smalley. I mean, that's what I would think of. That's who our vice president would be had
he
run.
Right.
I mean, that's just too much. Although.
Sonny Bono, also a politician and a pretty successful one. And Fred Grandy, who most people would know as Gopher on the Love Boat, was also in politics for a bit.
See, I would think you were kidding when you're saying all these things, but I know you're not.
No, those are every one of those.
How do you go from being a celebrity to being a politician? It seems like a weird jump.
It would be. I'm not sure.
Do you have any interest at all?
No.
No. All the pressure, you can't single-handedly change anything. You can try and make a difference, but you can do that outside of politics.
Right. You know who else, and I'm blanking on his name, but the guy who played Kumar in the Harold and Kumar movies, like Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Great movie.
Now he's on that Designated President show. But he left. He was on House. I cannot remember his name. He was on House and doing fine on House. And then he just decided he wanted to work for somebody's campaign. So he got out of House. Now he's back in acting again. I guess it wasn't quite what he had anticipated. He's a really good actor.
Is that his name, Kumar Patel?
No, he played Kumar in the Harold and Kumar movies. I'll look it up.
All right, I can't find it.
All right.
All right, we have another person that might be throwing their hat, his or her hat, into the ring for presidency. Cheryl?
Yeah, I had heard Mark Zuckerberg was toying with the idea.
Really?
I thought I heard that.
That would be interesting.
Why couldn't you run the country? I mean, Facebook is so huge.
Yeah.
I don't know, but... You know, but when you were talking about businessmen running the country, I just can't help but think about our current state and our situation. Everyone thought Rauner was going to fix it all. How's that working for us?
Right. I know. No, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
The actor's name, by the way, is Cal Penn.
Oh.
And I should be able to remember it because he's the only actor who has two colleges as first and last names. So I don't know why I couldn't think of that.
Only you would think of that.
I guess it. Kim, that's true. That's my weird shortcut for remembering his name, but for some reason I didn't.
One more for Oprah's cabinet in case she runs. Adam, you have an idea?
Yeah, you can get Maury for the CIA director.
Maury Povich.
Experience with the DNA test and the lie detector and all that.
That would be beautiful.
You can get Dr. Phil for the general.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I know mentioned Sally. We talked about Sally Jesse Raphael the other day. You got to find a place for her, too. She's too good to pass up.
No, she can maybe be in the Secretary of Interior or something.
Right.
Perfect.
So we'll find her something.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks.
Bye, Adam.
And finally, Elizabeth has a comment. Hi, Elizabeth.
I do. Hi, how are you?
Good.
Excellent. What's up?
Well, you know, you guys are making an assumption that just because they're actors, they're not smart people.
No, not at all.
I think smart people wouldn't want to be in charge of a political office.
I think you're right. And, you know, I think it takes ego to think you can run the country. We're seeing a little bit of that now, unfortunately. We're seeing a little too much of it. But the other thing about actors is they have to pretend to be somebody else, and I think politicians pretend every day.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Very true.
They have to say what people want to hear. I'm very cynical, you might notice.
Yeah, that's all right. That's fine.
We all have our moments.
Mine's kind of extended into the last 8 or 10 years. But no, I love President Obama, but I think everybody, they have to compromise. They have to make nice when they don't want to.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to show a lot of different shades, don't you, when you're president? Yeah.
Oprah couldn't do any worse.
I don't think so. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Elizabeth.
Let's run Steve Cochran for president. I'd vote for him.
I'm not going to vote for him.
You guys can be on the cabinet.
I don't want to be on the cabinet. I will close the cabinet.
There you go.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And we forgot one more real quickly. Hey, Bob, who did we forget? Another celebrity turned politico.
I'm thinking it was Clint Eastwood. He was a mayor or something of a small town.
Carmel, California.
Not a small town, but yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Carmel, California for quite a while, and people loved him.
Thank you, Bob.
So it can be done. You know, in Italy, they had a porn star.
Yes.
A woman named Chicolita, I think is her name, and she was a member.
That's a great porn star name, by the way.
It is. I think she was a member of the Italian parliament or something.
Yeah.
She was involved in politics for quite a while after coming off of a career of being in the adult film industry. So.
What a country. What a world.
So Ron Jeremy for president.
Oh, yeah.
4 more inches. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points. Dean.
He's Dean Richards. He's not just Dean. He's Dean Richards.
He's alive.
Alive and well.
He's alive.
Welcome back. You feeling better?
From the throes of death.
Oh.
Boy, you know when that flu bug hits you?
Yeah.
That's nothing to mess around with.
No. You had it pretty bad, didn't you?
I did. So, you know. Poor me. I got sick.
No, but, you know, nobody realizes how bad the flu can really knock you out for a week or two. And a lot of people then say, oh, what do I need a flu shot for?
Right.
I get one every year.
I was just mocking the flu shot like 2 days before I got sick.
Well, I read your review. Dean's list, a C- on the flu shot.
I've read so much that like this year's flu shot is not that effective.
Hmm.
The strain of flu that's going around, apparently the flu shot doesn't keep up with it. So the way that the flu got even with me for such nasty words was by showing me that it's even less effective when you don't get a shot at all.
Sure.
Yeah.
It struck you down. And and you were in bed for a while, right? You were out of commission.
I was out for like 3-4 days.
Something
like that. Thank you, NyQuil, though.
Yep.
Thank you, NyQuil. Yep. That's a nice, restful sleep.
What they say in the ads.
Yeah,
they say that in the ads.
I'm available for endorsements.
Dean, you know,
fortunately, I got well enough right before the Oscars, and then got sick again watching the show.
Let's talk about that.
I had this weird NyQuil dream that the end of the Oscars show got all messed up.
That's a crazy dream. That could never happen. All right, now that it's happened, now that we've seen it, now that we've gotten the explanation for it, what do you make of it? Because that was really one of the weird. Everybody has their favorite weird moments from the Academy Awards over history, but that was the strangest of all time.
It's just colossal carelessness on the part of the accountants who have one job backstage. Mm-hmm. They have a pile of envelopes. There are two piles of envelopes, one on each side of the stage in case there's a problem. So they have a duplicate set.
Mm-hmm.
There's one job for those accountants to make sure that the correct envelope gets into the hand of the correct presenter. And I'm going to think, I'm not a mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the night, I'm going to say there's one envelope left.
Right.
There should be one envelope left, not two envelopes left at that point in the evening. Couldn't have been that hard. But the guy who was supposed to be in charge of this whole thing it's been revealed that he was tweeting pictures of the stars backstage.
He and Emma Stone kept posing for pictures.
Emma Stone was standing there, yeah. And he was taking her picture.
Yeah.
It's not like she was posing.
Not her fault.
Not posing with him. But
right.
In fact, he even asked permission of the accounting firm, I think soon to be former accounting firm for the Academy Awards. Is it okay if he does that? They told him no, and he went ahead and did it anyway.
Yep.
And look what happened.
Yeah, colossal carelessness.
Dean, you know what I was fascinated by? And I'm watching it with my wife and one of my daughters, and they show that stage manager as everybody from La La Land is thanking the Academy, and they show the stage manager just running around like he's crazy. And I said to my wife, something's up because that guy is not supposed to be there.
Not
this is not going
to
end well.
Right.
And then yesterday, The Rock said, Dwayne Johnson said, he's sitting in the second row. He goes, when I saw this, I thought that guy was trying to sabotage the awards and I was going to charge him on stage. Did you read that?
I did not see that.
How weird would that moment
have been? That
would have
been great.
The Rock had that story optioned. You're going to see it in a movie in like 2 years. You're going to see that happen.
Right. Right. What'd you think of Jimmy Kimmel's job?
I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a fan of Jimmy Kimmel's, but I thought that he was funny and succinct. The people online are complaining the show is so political. The show really was not so political. Really, if anybody should be complaining about the comedy on the show, it should be Matt Damon. He was the butt of most of the jokes that were hilarious, by the way, that I cannot get enough of the Jimmy Kimmel, Matt Damon feud. It's so funny and so goofy. Hilariously funny. The amount of political humor is about what you'd see on any late night show anyway.
Yeah.
It was not overtly political, despite how much people are trying to make it political. It really was not.
Don't you think it's funny how many people, I don't know if you were reading people's texts and tweets, but people don't understand that Matt Damon is as in on this joke as he could possibly be. This is all as concocted as ever.
Right.
And people go, why is he so mean to him? He's one of the top stars in the movies. And then to have this guy ragging on him all the time. But it's part of the joke. It's fun.
I just love it. Even the day after, after this big debacle, this big mess which became it. It doesn't even matter who won the Oscar anymore.
Right.
After all that anybody was talking about was this whole debacle. And Jimmy Kimmel's on his show the next night explaining it. And he goes, this debacle, all I know is this. Matt Damon didn't win anything. He still was giving it to him. Still hilarious.
How did that all begin, their little rift?
In the early days of the show, they thought it'd be funny, and they pre-taped this. They pre-taped Matt Damon just sitting in the green room waiting to go on. So as a joke, Jimmy Kimmel said at the end of one show, sorry we didn't get to Matt Damon next time. And then they started doing it almost every night.
Over and over and over.
Yeah.
And Matt, you see Matt Damon sitting in the green room disappointed.
That's so funny.
Yeah. It's very funny.
Yeah, and springboard from there.
Yeah. What does it mean to a movie that wins a bunch of awards? I mean, La La Land did pretty well. Moonlight did pretty well. There was a couple of films that did well. So what does that mean? Are they going to make a lot more money, Dean, because they won four awards?
They'll make a little bit more money. It won't be a huge bump. There definitely is going to be a bump. Moonlight's going to be in about two more thousand theaters than it was last week as a result of winning Best Picture. But, traditionally, Moonlight started off as a little independent film that was made for like $1.5 million. It's already tremendously profitable.
Yeah.
It's not going to make that much more money. Films like Spotlight last year and King's Speech, from the years before, they never go on to be enormous blockbusters. I think that's part of why the ratings were down. The ratings overall for the Oscars were down 4%, which is of concern to the Oscar people.
Sure.
They would like to see the ratings go up instead of down, but it was still the number one television event, not only of Sunday night, but all day Sunday. It was the biggest, most watched television event. It's still one of the most television most watched television events of the year with 34 million people watching it. It's still a big event. So just, you know, to have these titles, you know, come up and get a little bit more attention means something when they come out on DVD, and almost all of them are coming out within the next 30 days. Almost all the nominated or winning films are going to come out on Blu-ray and DVD and digital platforms. La La Land is expected to come out in May, but all the rest will be out, and they'll you know, have some success that's the way they did.
What do you know about Denzel Washington? Wendy and I discussed this the day after the awards. When they announced that the winner's Casey Affleck, they've got the five boxes of all the actors nominated, and you see that Denzel Washington does not seem pleased that he didn't win and it went to Casey Affleck. Do you know anything more about that?
No, I haven't heard specifically of anything factual. Denzel hasn't talked about it. I think he thought, as I did, I thought that he was going to win myself. He just is coming off of the Screen Actors Guild Awards win, which is that's a pretty significant sign when you win Best Actor with the Screen Actors Guild. That huge body of voters in the Screen Actors Guild, who also vote in for the most part vote for in the Academy. That's a huge voting block. I mean, that's like getting California or New York or like one of the big states to come in for you, and it just did not. And I don't think that anybody thought that Casey Affleck was going to wind up being the winner. He had a lot of momentum in the beginning that subsided. He had the sexual harassment, or as Wendy likes to say, because she talks fancy, harassment suit that came up that turned off a lot of people regarding Casey Affleck winning, including Brie Larson, who gave him the award. This it was significant that he won, and Brie Larson stood on the stage about to present him the statue, and she wouldn't applaud for him because of that sexual harassment suit. So
she should have just dropped it, like when he went to grab it,
right? Yeah, or handed it to him, then pulled it back. Psych! Yeah. At the last minute,
she should have dropped it the way they dropped the lawsuits. The same exact kind of move.
Because I thought Denzel was definitely going to win. If it wasn't going to be him, it would have been Ryan Gosling, riding on the popularity of La La Land.
Sure.
You never know how the voting's going to go.
So true.
You just never know. I was disappointed. I thought La La Land was the best picture of the year.
Yeah, me too.
Myself.
So good. Wendy's a huge fan of it. I'm a huge fan of your future.
I was full of NyQuil when I predicted that.
All right, Dean Richards will tell you what movies are coming out this weekend next. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN, along with our friend Dean Richards. Dean, another superhero movie, but this one's just a little bit different, right, Logan?
This is, it apparently going to be the last in the Wolverine series, the spinoffs that Hugh Jackman has done after the initial success of X-Men. It's set in the future. Mm-hmm. Where Logan is taking care of Patrick Stewart's character from the film, who is now much older, much more disabled, and he's protecting him when a young girl is presented to him, who appears also to be one of the mutants. Mm-hmm. This is in a world where there are virtually no mutants anymore. They've virtually been eliminated. And this young girl is being sought for some reason, and he needs to protect Professor Xavier while also trying to deliver this young girl to where she needs to be. I know you'll find it hard to believe, while bad guys are in pursuit.
Why are there always bad guys in pursuit?
Why can't they just relax?
I know.
Why can't there be a movie about bad guys going, I'm in my chair right now. Do I need to get up?
Right. Really? That'd be great.
Really? I'm a little tired right now. But no, they're in hot pursuit. And I've lost track how many strictly Logan/Wolverine films there have been. I think this is the third.
I think you're right, yeah.
And I want to say I think this is the best of all of the three.
Oh, good.
Wasn't expecting that. Third films in sequence like that often kind of run out of steam, but if anything, they've found a way to recharge this whole thing. Hugh Jackman is great. Really brings so much dimension to this character. It's a super violent. It's one of the more violent X-Men slash Wolverine films that we've had in a long time. But it's done with a great deal of thought. The story is solid and well put together. And as it develops, you begin to understand more and more what this little girl represents and why it's important. It's done with humor. In addition to Wolverine taking care of the Patrick Stewart character, Professor Xavier, there is another character that's played by Stephen Merchant. Do you know who that
is?
Yeah,
British actor. Yeah, Ricky Gervais's friend.
Right, from the original, the British version of The Office.
Yeah.
Who is one of my favorite actors, just so weird and deadpan.
Yeah.
And he plays a character like that here that offers a lot of comedic relief in this film. So, I mean, this film just really has it going on in a lot of different directions. Only thing I would warn everybody is it's quite a bit more violent than other X-Men movies that we've seen in the past. It feels like there's a lot more kind of blatant violence, not comic book violence. Yeah. And because, you know, Logan's special power are the blades that shoot out of his hands. It's a little on the bloody side, a little gory, icky from time to time.
Hmm.
Still enjoyed it, though.
Hey, Dean, someone has texted, if I haven't seen a single Wolverine movie, would I be able to understand and enjoy this?
Yeah, you'll be able to understand it. It won't be quite as meaningful because there is a lot of nuance, especially between Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. It's one of the most endearing parts of this film is that these old friends in the series of X-Men movies and the Wolverine movies, you're watching these two old characters kind of grow old together and kind of, you know, look back at their lives together. And if you have a history with them in the motion pictures, you'll understand it. It'll mean more.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't mean that you won't understand what's going on in this film. You will, and you'll get it. But if you know the history of these characters, it's like watching, you know, two old friends who you've known for a decade, you know, kind of getting old and
that's sweet.
Getting
yeah.
to a new point in their life. That's what I mean. The writing in this is, you know, so much more than, I'm mad. Look at my blades come out of my fingers.
That was the screenplay you and I submitted, remember?
That's right. It was actually called
Ur the movie.
Over and over again.
Yep. What's Dean's list on this?
I gave this Dean's list B+.
Oh, that's outstanding. Yeah. Good, good, good. And then really quickly, Table 19. I know very little about Table 19. What is that?
You're probably better off. It's an alleged comedy that is we've all been to weddings and maybe sat at the dreaded table of complete strangers.
Sure.
Where you sit and you don't know anybody and you're wondering, you know, why was I chosen to sit at this, you know, this table, you know, where I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And it's awkward and it's weird. And that's what this movie is about. It's about a wedding that takes place. 10 people are, you know, sort of this table of misfits in the back of the room that, as they put it in the movie, it's the table that if it disappeared, nobody would even miss anybody who was at this table.
Funny concept.
It is a funny concept, but it's this table of people who don't know each other, that don't like each other, and in the blink of an eye, suddenly are like the best of friends. It's a concept that just doesn't develop very well. It's not funny. It doesn't flow very well. And there are like really good actors in this movie. Stephen Merchant is also in this movie.
How about that?
And is even funnier in this movie. He's the one thing that I liked in this movie. Anna Kendrick is in it. Lisa Kudrow, Craig Robinson, lovely June Squibb. She was in the movie Nebraska. That's what comes to mind. The young was then young boy in Grand Budapest Hotel. Tony Revolori. Is in the film. So a lot of people and people whose faces you'll recognize, but script is terrible, doesn't hold together. Overall, is not funny, giving this Dean's List C-.
Yeah.
That's not good.
C minus at this one. It's as bland as a piece of wedding cake a year later. I'm trying to come up with some like funny wedding cake joke for my review for tomorrow. There's something there.
You'll get it.
Rubber chicken.
Nah, you'll find
it. It's like the bad rubber chicken, something. I'm working on it.
Dean, thank
you. Tune in tomorrow and see what metaphor I wind up deciding
on. All right. Can't wait. That's Dean Richards. Dean,
thanks.
Dean. Have a good weekend.
Bye, guys.
Is this like the updated version of Tubular Bells?
I think it might be. It has some of the same elements, doesn't it? Hi, everybody.
Yeah, bells.
It does, right. That's the part. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy. And if you would like to participate in the show verbally, 312-981-7200, you can call us. Or by way of text is the same number.
I might be completely unplugged, but sometimes when things happen or news breaks when we're during our lunch break or having our lunch break, I'm unaware of it.
Yeah, a story is coming over the wire that I found out about either yesterday or the day before, but this is news to you.
It is news to me. Former Vice President Joe Biden's son Hunter confirmed that he is having a romantic relationship with his late brother's widow, according to the New York Post.
Yeah.
Hallie Biden, who has two children with the late Beau Biden. Mm-hmm. How did he pass away again? Do we remember?
It was a cancer of some sort, wasn't it?
I believe that's correct. I don't remember specifically. And that's kind of why Joe Biden was saying he wasn't going to run for president. He wants to grieve. He's not ready yet.
Right.
Hallie Biden, who has two children with the late Beau Biden, is now in a relationship with Hunter,
his younger brother,
who is separated from his wife, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Beau Biden, Delaware's former attorney general, died of brain cancer May 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Biden told Page Six, which is the New York Post's.
It's like their gossip page.
I didn't want to use that word, but I will.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden told Page Six, Hallie and I are incredibly lucky to have found the love and support we have for each other in such a difficult time. And that's been obvious to the people who love us most. We've been so lucky to have family and friends who have supported us every step of the way.
So what do you make of this?
I don't really know. Her husband died. He's separated from his wife. I don't have the information if that's why he is separated from his wife.
That would do it.
It also,
if you say to your wife, by the way, I'm also dating our sister-in-law. That's a deal breaker. For most, not for everybody.
Clearing that up.
There's some people that are more open to that sort of thing, but my wife, old-fashioned, she would not buy that. Very old-fashioned.
I get they're both grieving. A lot of times, you know.
You find a kinship in that.
You do.
Wouldn't you? Yeah.
But this makes people wonder if they had a little something for each other before Beau passed away. And that's where I'm just being negative.
I don't.
How do you know?
I wouldn't read into, I don't know. I wouldn't think that was the case. I'm sure, you know, she's had a very difficult time since his illness and his death. And, you know, his brother just happened to be there. Well, yeah, but you would, ideally, I'm sure that's what they would want, but.
I know love has no boundary.
Love has no boundary.
That's not really the saying, but.
That's a good saying.
I paraphrase.
You can say that, sure.
I just don't know.
There's entanglements to it, certainly, like people saying essentially what you just said.
And the kids, that's just,
that would be confusing.
Oh, my God, Uncle Hunter is soon to be called Dad.
Except a lot of women call their new boyfriends after they lose their husband through divorce or death, they call them their uncles. They say to the kids, you know, Uncle Mark is coming over. Uncle Dave is coming over.
That's not an uncle.
This isn't, but now this is an uncle. I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying, you know, here's who I feel the worst for in this. I feel bad for his estranged wife.
Well, maybe she wanted the separation before. Maybe she dumped him and then he's commiserating with his sister-in-law.
Maybe. So this is, again, I deal in a world of hypotheticals. If something happened to Jim, I know he has a brother, a younger brother. You would not turn to him? That would not be your new romance?
Okay, first of all, no. Second of
all, you can think about it. Do you want a moment?
I don't need to think about it.
You can take a few minutes to think about it. It would not be him?
Nothing against Shag, his nickname.
Yeah.
Nothing against him, but no.
No.
just because he's your brother-in-law, or is there other reasons? Like, it's like automatically, is he off the list because he's your brother? He is. All right.
It's just strange, and honestly, I don't care, and whatever anybody wants to do is their own business. It doesn't hurt me.
What makes you happy? Go for it. Love has no boundary. You know who once said that, Wendy? You did. About a minute and 30 seconds.
What is the darn expression?
Love is a many splendored thing.
No, that's not what I was thinking.
Love will get you in trouble every time.
Love will keep us together.
No.
Think of me, babe, whenever.
Yeah. Love that chicken
from
Popeye's.
Don't call me babe.
That's what they say. Love that chicken from Popeye's.
Love has no labels.
Love has no labels.
No.
Love has no pride.
No, that wasn't either. I like mine best, actually.
Love has no business being here.
Love on the rocks. Ain't no big surprise. Neil Diamond said that.
Well, good for him. Is he dating his sister-in-law?
No.
Not now.
Although diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Okay, will you just stop it?
There's another good one. I like that one.
God, this is going to be a very long day for me, I have a feeling. Hi, Jerry. How are you?
Wendy, how are you?
Good.
Bill, how are you?
Love has no boundary.
Yep.
No, if they remarry, she will not have to change her name again, correct?
That's true.
So the towels, the monogram can stay the same.
The benefits are endless.
It's a package deal.
Right. You don't have to reintroduce a new boyfriend at any family gatherings. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, we know him.
I think it's so wrong.
You do think it's wrong?
Yes, definitely.
I think it's off limits. Like, I got to tell you, if I was single and I had a girlfriend who got a divorce and just say, like, her husband was hitting on me,
yeah.
That's another boundary that you can't cross.
Right, right.
Hmm. Yeah. I have morals. I know it's surprising to many of you.
Wendy, say that again?
Yeah, I know. No, you only get it once. Shut up, Jerry. We have a bad connection. All right,
thanks,
do
Jerry.
It before I do.
Wow.
But you know what I mean? It's like you wouldn't date your best friend's spouse if they broke up.
You like to say no, but under the circumstance.
I'm going to act on my no, too.
But under the circumstance, this woman has had an awful, awful period in her life.
And Hunter's had an interesting life as well. You know, he lost his mother and was then especially close to his brother.
Right.
Not close enough, evidently.
What do you mean?
Or maybe too
closer.
Close.
Maybe all very right. close.
Yeah, very yeah. close.
Love knows no bounds. That's what I'm thinking of.
Is love knows no bounds.
Or love is a battlefield, someone suggested.
People say that too.
Pat Benatar.
Yeah. Yeah.
All is fair in love and war.
I've heard that one.
I don't believe that. Oh, God, now everybody's
love me like a rock. Have you ever heard people say that? Because they do say that.
I don't know what that means. I don't love a rock.
Like Dwayne Johnson.
No, I don't love him.
No.
Hi, John. How are you?
I was doing okay to this conversation.
Yeah, I know.
Stand in line.
Well, now you're in it, so got to be in it to not win it.
Such a high-profile name that really took a lot of guts to do this, I think.
I agree.
But guts are, I mean, I am not here to judge, and whatever makes them happy, I don't know their circumstances. I'm just putting it into perspective, like, that's just a little weird in my book.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to say love has no integrity.
That could also apply, yeah. I get it.
Why do we love if love is so many bad things?
You women, that's why.
Can't live with them, can't shoot them.
Well, we could, but the consequences are severe.
No.
Yeah, all right, John.
Oh,
we got to hang up on yourself now, too.
It turned crazy.
I know. I'm not judging. I'm not. I'm just throwing it out there to listen to what other people think.
But it's hard
You're just encouraging others to judge.
No, right. I don't know how I feel about it.
But admit this. It's hard because we're so far removed from this. We don't know what's gone on in the last. This happened in 2015. He was sick prior to this. We don't know what happened. You know, it must be awful to lose her husband, awful for him to lose a brother. So they've got that in common right away.
They're commiserating.
I do feel bad for his estranged wife. That's the one who's really getting the short end on this.
Unless she's the one who caused the separation. Maybe she requested it.
Maybe.
Because that's
know.
What I
what
mean.
What leads you to believe that? Did something happen?
He was estranged, it appears, from the story. They were already estranged when the two of them got together.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. Again, I'm not judging. Cheryl, I'm not judging.
Hi, this is Jill.
Oh, hi, Jill. How are you?
I'm good. I have a story about this.
What happened?
Well, a very good friend of mine from high school, and we're going back 40 years. She came from a very large Catholic family. There were 13 in the family. They were all about 2 years apart. One of her older brothers got divorced from his wife, who was a few years younger than the older brother.
Yeah.
And then he turns around. She turns around and marries one of her younger brothers.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And she would write. This was back in the day where everybody wrote letters. She would write me these long, gut-wrenching letters about Christmas and Thanksgiving and how mom and dad have to keep like a chart of when so-and-so was, let's just call her Cheryl, when Cheryl was here on Christmas, then Bobby couldn't be here with his new wife and family.
Yeah, that's a mess.
And they never got over it. Now, her parents are long gone now, and so everybody has their own Christmases, their own Thanksgivings, their own 4th of July parties, but it's like, I don't know. The Bidens aren't original here.
Is Cheryl still married to that guy, Jill?
As far as I know.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
as
but
far
that...
as I know. I mean, that's a lot of people in one family to keep track of. I don't really know. But I would also like to say Jackie Kennedy to you.
What happened with Jackie Kennedy?
She got very fond of Bobby.
I don't know that it was ever romantic, though. I think he was there, from what I've read, he was there to comfort her and console her. But I don't know. Do you think it became a romantic thing?
It depends whose book you read.
Yeah?
That's a good point.
All right.
It just depends whose book you read. Anyway, love your show.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it's creepy, too.
All thank right. you, Jill.
Thanks, Cheryl.
I didn't really say it was creepy.
So if she married him, Beau's brother, her kids would be their own cousins, wouldn't they? They would be.
You've confused
that
me.
That would be strange.
See, that's the one reason I wouldn't do it, because I couldn't figure out how to introduce people.
Tree. Right. All right. A quick break and then more discussion. We're at 312-981-7200. This is WGN.
It's Every Game Counts time for the Blackhawks Friday on WGN TV. It's Blackhawks Islanders. Watch the action Friday night at 7:30 on WGN TV Sports.
All right. If you're just joining us, some strange goings on in the Biden family.
Former Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter, has confirmed that he is having a romantic relationship with his late brother's widow, Hallie. And Hunter has...
proven his name. He lived up to his name beautifully.
Hunter is separated from his wife, Kathleen, and Beau Biden died of brain cancer in May of 2015,
yeah.
And Hunter is saying, you know, we're both very incredibly lucky to have found the love and support we have for each other in such a difficult time, and it's been obvious to the people who love us most. So it sounds like...
They want it to work. Well, it's working for them.
Sounds like they're accepting it.
You're upset about it.
I don't know how I feel, so uh-huh. I go to Joanne. Joanne, how do you feel about this?
You know, honestly, I don't give a darn one way or the other, but here's my issue in a mess like this. What about the children involved here? If Hunter has children and he's announcing to the public while he's still married to their mother...
That's true. They're separated, not divorced. If that's true...
Hold it. That's the whole point. Separation and divorce are two different issues. And I'll tell you, I saw it in a family where Honey Bunch went with another woman and then brought his girlfriend to town and introduced her around town while he was still married to his wife. The toll it takes on children is beyond belief.
He does, by the way, have three children. I can confirm that, three young
and
daughters.
And I'll tell you this, too, for Mrs. Beau. If she has a brain cell in her head... A man that can be that reckless about his wife and his children, believe me, is not long-term good happiness.
Hmm. All right.
He's morally unfit. He's a jerk.
All right.
Thank you, Joanne. We appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Call.
Didn't she start by saying she didn't care?
She started out not caring.
But I get it. I don't care. And whatever goes on in someone else's house, really, I don't care either. I really don't. We're just having a discussion about it. The whole just being separated thing, I was telling you off the air, perhaps he should wait till the divorce goes through, because if they're truly in love, then love has patience.
Love has patience. That's often been said.
Love wears a slip.
Yep. Now, Wendy, you know, the one thing, you know, I've studied the Old West extensively. And when I say that, I mean, I watched Deadwood when it was on. Here's what I learned about the Old West from Deadwood, that when a man died in the Old West,
it was his brother's job, if that brother wasn't married, to marry the widow and tend to his family. Did you know that?
No.
That was commonplace in the Old West. I know this is not the Old West, although we're getting there. But some people still live by those values. If the brother dies, I have to take over his wife and his children.
That doesn't seem right. And that, again, was way back when.
That was a lot. Yeah, that was hundreds of years ago in the Old West.
All right, well, I
maybe
wish
the
them...
Bidens live in the Old
well,
West.
They're from Delaware,
right?
So
that's like the Old West.
That's west of the Atlantic.
Yeah, there's horses there.
Chestnuts.
Yeah. Cowboy hats, they have stuff. It's mm-hmm. like the Old West.
Whips.
Yep.
All right, I don't know if you're as distracted as I am, but there's lovely music coming our way from the hallway.
I don't hear it.
I don't. You know what? The Bidens can do what they want. I wish everyone happiness. It just seems like a weird setup.
Yep.
But
we'll see how it plays out.
We will.
That's all we can do. I wish we had a barbershop quartet to ease our pain.
All right, you're laughing. I'm not laughing. I like madrigals, which is basically singing without music.
Right.
A cappella, if you will.
Yeah.
And there have been lots of barbershop quartets. But these are women.
Mm-hmm.
These are part of Sweet Adeline's international competition. They're called the Choral Heirs, and I can't wait to hear them.
Right.
And it sounded like angels singing.
It does sound like it sounds like angels. So they'll be on, and they'll entertain us.
We
and
hope.
They're all married to their sister's brothers
okay,
as an added bonus.
Stop it. I think they just left. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I am pretty excited to introduce with you some pretty amazing women. They are part of the Choral Heirs Chorus. Directors Bonnie Fideschi and Amy Brinkman are with us. Hi, ladies. How are you?
This is how it should always be, Wendy. I always want to have 9 or 10 women in the studio at all times. That's the way it should be.
All right. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. So maybe we need a little more volume on them, Ben, or I'll just turn other microphones on.
Here we go.
All right.
That's better.
All right. So my son is in a madrigal thing, and this is kind of what this is, right? There's no music to accompany it.
Right.
It's a cappella.
A cappella, that's right.
Very similar. We just have different chords than the madrigal singers use, a little bit more older type chords. Amy would know the better description.
This is a cappella music in barbershop, and the barbershop style is a little bit different than any kind of choral music because the melody usually isn't sung by the highest part in barbershop. It's kind of tucked in between harmony parts above and below it, which makes it a little bit different. It's a strictly American art form that came here hundreds of years ago and started with men, and then women came along and we made it better.
Hey, we can do that.
Yeah. Why can't you? That's perfect.
So
with a barbershop quartet, obviously quartet infers that there's four people singing.
Right.
So are you taking the same kind of approach to the music? There's just
yeah.
more of you.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Correct.
Our chorus has about 90 active members.
All right, hang on a second. Our microphones don't seem to be picking you up at all. So, all right, there we go.
That's better.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Our chorus has about 90 members, and we're the same thing as just a giant-sized quartet on a bigger scale. We do a lot more choreography. If you grew up ever seeing a men's barbershop quartet, I think people have a straw hat and a vest kind
yeah,
of
thing. Sure.
Yeah, we're not that.
Not anymore.
No. Would a woman's version be a beauty shop quartet instead of a barbershop quartet?
It would be.
All right.
Yeah. And now I've noticed you guys, you can look up the Choral Heirs Chorus. You have a lot of things on YouTube, and you dress very spangly. You have a lot of sequins.
That's all part of the deal.
False mm-hmm. eyelashes.
Yes.
False eyelashes.
I love that. And you're not just standing there like a lot of times the barbershop quartet guys would just stand there really stiff.
Sure.
You guys are like doing yoga and stuff.
Dancing on stage, doing choreo. It's absolutely.
It's pretty amazing.
And who comes up with the choreography for that? Is that you or does somebody else?
Sometimes there are people from the outside of the chorus who create it for us. Sometimes there are people within the chorus who create it, and then we drill and drill and drill. I mean, there are actually choruses around the world who like do cartwheels while they're singing, and amazing.
Really?
Yes,
yes.
You'd be blown
amazing.
Away.
It's very physical.
We're not quite there.
Well, no, not yet. Yeah. Give it time.
How many women in the total group of the Choral Heirs Chorus?
About 90 active members.
90?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Will they all be at Drury Lane on Saturday night?
Probably
pretty many.
80 of them.
About 85 will be there, yeah. We have a performance this weekend, a show, and we try to have as many people there as possible. We have a few people coming back from vacations, and other than that, everybody's
oh my
usually
gosh.
around.
and surgeries, you know. All that dancing puts those joints out of whack.
Did you guys sing in school? Were you part of the choirs in school,
yeah,
or all of a sudden?
Musical theater.
All of you guys.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
A lot of us were, but some people
dancing.
Hang on, that mic is not working at all, Ben. That one on the left, at all. Sorry. That's Amy Brinkman.
A lot of us, I think, all sang in our younger days, and then you don't really have an outlet to sing when you're older, necessarily. Maybe you sing even through college, and then all of a sudden there's nothing to find.
Yeah.
So barbershop has become a great hobby and a great place outlet for women that are looking for something to do. And it's turned into a family outside of our daily lives.
Yeah. How often do you practice? How many times a week?
Once a week on Monday nights in Elmhurst, from 7 till 10. 3 hours every week. And sometimes on the weekends, we'll throw in a little extra.
As we get closer to our international competition, which is happening this fall, we'll throw in an all-day session. Or we just had a coach in last weekend from Arizona. So it was Friday night and all day Saturday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is there a chorus that's your rival, or does that only happen on Glee?
There are always rivals. We are our own worst enemy.
You're your own worst enemy.
Yeah. There are a lot of barbershop choruses in the Chicagoland area, and there are one very premier chorus that happens to have won our international contest many times.
Oh, wow.
And they're up in Northbrook area. So, yeah, we do have rivals right around here, but, you know, it's a happy competition for
Is
all
it?
Of us. Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't try to steal a member away from another chorus, or they wouldn't? No. Never. No?
For the right price.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Now, do you guys have a website?
Mm-hmm. We do. It's coral-airs, A-I-R-E-S. com.
All right. One of the top-ranked barbershop choruses in the world, part of Sweet Adeline's International, which is the competition you guys were talking about. Mm-hmm. How many groups are there that compete in this competition?
So in order to qualify to go to the international competition, you have to win your regional competition. So there's 35 regions worldwide, and you have to win your regional competition to be able to attend the international. So we'll be up against 34 or 5 other choruses.
Winners.
Wow.
Winners,
yeah, from all around the world, and
it's
literally
very
around
intense.
The world. Sweden, England, New Zealand. I mean, there are choruses all around the world that come, not just in the United States, and we all get together, and it's a week of solid barbershop from start to finish. Quartets compete as well. Smaller and mid-sized choruses also have a competition, and then the bigger choruses compete later in the week. So
that's amazing.
It's
so global. And
it is.
Like the World Series of barbershop.
It is, isn't it?
It's like got to win your division to get to,
to advance.
The World Series.
And do you have to audition to be part of the Choral Airs? Because I've been known to sing a little bit. Perhaps
I will audition for you live on the air.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think we should do that today.
We do have an audition process, but it's not really that intimidating. We're just making sure that you can kind of sing your part and be able to hear it with 3 or 4 other people. So when we put you up on the risers with a lot of other people mixed up, you'll be able to kind of hold your part on your own.
That's got to be hard. Do you have to cover one ear or something?
Sometimes at the beginning you can sing.
And then you get your groove?
Yeah.
It's daunting to hold your part.
Sure, I can imagine. Yeah.
All right, well, they are the Choral Airs Chorus, and Everyone's a Winner event is happening this Saturday, March 4th. It's at Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook. It's a lovely place to go see these lovely ladies. And why don't you do a song for us right now?
Sure.
That's the tuning harp, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Who's that coming down the street? Who's that baby? Ain't he sweet? Who's that guy? Oh, my, so divine, so divine. Who's that? Just like a dream, cutest guy you've ever seen. I can tell you now, he's all mine. No, he's mine. No, he's mine. He's all mine. Ain't he sweet, coming down the street. Ask you very confidentially, ain't he sweet? He could be mine. Look at me, I'm in my prime. Squeeze that guy, cuddle up with him. He's so divine, just look him up. Perfection. Oh, here he comes.
Here he comes
in my direction. So fine, I repeat. Think he's kind of neat. Check him out on social media, ain't he? Oh, ain't my baby sweet? Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't be maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Whoa! Yes, ma'am, we've decided. No, ma'am, we won't hide it. Yes, ma'am, you're invited now.
Right now, by the way.
By the way, when we reach the preacher, I'll say.
baby, no, sir, not maybe, yeah. Oh, that's my baby now. Oh, that's my baby now. Just cast an eye. And carefully, 'cause he's my baby. Yes, sir, my sweet little baby. Yes, sir, that's my baby now, baby now, right now, right now.
The choral airs chorus. I'm sitting here with the dumbest smile on my face just repeating this up.
That's so good.
Wow.
That is amazing. Wow. The directors of the Choral Airs Chorus, who will be at Drury Lane Theater this Saturday in Oak Brook, Bonnie Fideschi, Amy Brinkman, you guys are sisters?
We are. Yep.
Did you sing together at home growing up all the time?
A little bit, yep. Our dad was a barbershopper as well, sang in a men's barbershop chorus and a barbershop quartet, so we kind of grew up with it in the house.
That's amazing. Great.
We didn't really find women's barbershop till we were much older.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it existed till right now.
That's part of the process. Lots of people don't know it exists, and it's a great outlet for women who want to sing somewhere.
Do you know how I know it exists? This is so strange, but on an episode of Hazel when I was a kid, Hazel was a member of the Sweet Adelines.
Yeah. Mr. B.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. B.
That's how I knew. So.
Oh, Mr. B. That's awesome. I had no idea. That's
just one episode, but that's how I know.
And Jimmy Fallon actually does barbershop on his show.
Yeah, he does.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Does barbershop.
Yeah, but they're not women. You know?
No, but
Fallon looks okay in a dress.
All right, so Bonnie and Amy, as we mentioned, I don't know if each one of you want to step up to the microphone just to give your name, because we have to give everybody credit here, because you guys are absolutely amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So who else is here with you today?
I'll let everybody else take a chance.
Debbie Lee.
Julia King.
Janet Masters.
Go to that mic, because that's the only mic not working.
Linda Herza. Hi, John. And Peggy Sherpy. Hi, everybody.
And we have one more, I believe.
Tracy Hewlett.
Yeah.
You ladies are sensational.
So good.
Of course, Ain't He Sweet, taken from the song Ain't She Sweet.
Right,
you just switched it around a little bit.
Yeah.
Because
I don't remember the word social media being in the original version of that song either. You tossed that in.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
All right, a quick break, and then we're back with the Choral Airs Chorus. You can go to their website at choral-airs.com, choral/AIRES. It's hard to spell when everybody's looking at you. The choralairs.com, and we'll be back. They'll do another song. They'll be at Drury Lane on Saturday. It's Bill, Wendy, 720 WGN. All right, we have some very talented ladies with us this afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
The Choral Airs Chorus, and I guess what's going on at Drury Lane this Saturday, it's like a spring luncheon performance, correct?
Fundraiser of the year.
It's a professional fashion show, actually. Mm.
A professional fashion show with the professional Choral Airs Chorus performing. We have Bonnie Fideschi.
You got it.
And Amy Brinkman. They are the directors, and we have all the other women with us. And will you wow us with another song?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Until I fell in love, my life was very easy. The moon just made it moonlight. The breeze just made it breezy. And then I fell in love, and things at once were clear. Now I hardly see or hear. Heaven, how high the moon. There is no moon above when love is far away too, till it comes true. brightest night would shine if you would come to me soon. Until you will, I'll still my heart. How high the moon, high the moon, do 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 do. Somewhere there's heaven, it's where you are. Somewhere there's music. How near, how near, how far. The darkest night would shine if you would come to me soon. Come soon till you will. How still my heart, how high the moon, the moon.
How high the moon,
the moon.
How high the moon.
The Choral Airs Chorus. Bill, can I just tell you something? Every time we have somebody in the studio, they say, I can't believe that's your job. You guys are having fun all day long. Are you having fun, ladies, or what?
Yeah. Looks like it. Wow.
We must be doing something wrong if you have to ask.
I mean, it's so funny. There were people walking down past the studio, and they're looking in, and they're smiling, and they're giving you a thumbs up. It's just, it's happiness, and that's what we need in this day and age, happiness.
It is. I don't know if it's economically feasible, but I would like to have you guys in the backseat of my car. And when I drive around, you just think that would be the best thing in the world.
A school bus?
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Did some of you drive in together? And if so, do you guys just all sing the way in?
We did this time. Yeah, we were vocalizing in the car.
Four of us from the suburbs came out together. And some of them live, these three live in the city, and she was in the city working today. So, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. What happens, hypothetically, if you don't, you have the harmonica, right?
Pitch
right.
Pipe?
Yeah. Pitch pipe.
Pitch pipe.
So if you don't do that, if you don't just hit a single note, does that make it harder? It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We wouldn't even want to try that. That would be
really?
That's a total malfunction.
Really?
None of us are really professionally musically trained.
Yeah.
So
you're not? Wait a minute. What?
No. I mean, well, we do have one professional musician.
Yeah.
Here, but most of us are just people that like to sing.
Love to sing.
So
love music. And we teach people that.
Yeah, we teach
people. We teach them what they need to know.
So when you hear that note, because I'm non-musical, when you hear that note, does that say to you, that's the note I'm trying to achieve? Is that what you're
trying to start on?
Really. That's the key that the song might be written in.
Oh, okay.
And each of us singing in four parts have a different place that we go from that key.
Oh.
So whatever I blow on this pitch pipe, then they all know where their part is relative to that.
That song is what the first word is, and then it gets us there in our brain.
Oh, okay.
Usually we have more trouble thinking what the first word is than the first note. We're all pretty good with the note. It's just like,
yeah, you really have to have a good ear.
Do you ever just blank out and forget a word to a song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've done it on stage.
Sure.
Absolutely. No one knows.
You just point like that.
It's her fault.
I did it on the car right in. It was obvious because there were only four of us.
Oh, no. How is it different? There's eight of you currently, but when you do this at Drury Lane, there's going to be over 100. So what's different in your mindset when you're singing with eight as opposed to 100 plus?
It's a little bit more, we have to be focused here.
Yeah.
There's more of you to cover for
exactly.
you, like in your different...
Exactly. So we'll have long phrases in the chorus where we'll tell people, don't sing it that long because your voice will change by the time you're air deprived at the end.
Yeah.
And there's other people you're singing your part. So it's a little bit easier. You know, the pressure's kind of off when everyone else is around you. There's probably 40 people, 45 people who sing the melody part in the chorus and about 25 that sing the baritone part, which is like the middle part.
Right.
And we have, 10 tenors. They sing the high part in barbershop and about 25 basses. Yeah.
There's
so
it's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Right.
Baritone's
really
the
is.
Best, though.
Is baritone?
I take issue with that.
Ladies, you are absolutely amazing and just really brought a smile to our faces and I'm sure all the listeners today, too.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
All right, you can find them, let me do this correctly now, choralairs.com. It's choral-airs. .com. The Choral Airs Chorus. They're part of the Sweet Adelines International. When is your next competition so we can root for you?
We We're getting ready for a regional competition. We're just going in to be evaluated there, kind of like a get some comments as we prepare for the international competition, which is in October.
October.
In Las
Columbus
Vegas.
Columbus Day. Oh,
yes,
wow.
At the MGM Grand.
Yeah, we'll be at the MGM. So.
That's so nice. And when you say comments, what... They don't say anything derogatory.
There are women in the organization who literally take education to become judges in the organization, and it's a hard process.
Sure.
Very long. They listen and they evaluate you on four different categories, and they write notes specifically for their category, and then they'll give them to us as the directors, and we read them to the chorus, and we take those and hopefully learn from whatever we did that performance and build on it for the next
good.
Time.
Good.
Mm-hmm. I would like to come sing with you one night.
Yes. All right. Yes.
Yeah. We would love it.
Monday,
love it.
Monday,
love
Monday
right. would. Love
I can't commit
it.
To it, but I would like to at
Monday
least come by.
Come
some, all right.
Yes.
You're more than welcome. It's, we'd love to have you.
You're based out of Elmhurst?
Yep. Right. Yeah.
It's awesome. Pretty contagious.
We rehearse right at the corner almost of York Road and St. Charles. So it's
on the
there.
Street?
Inside.
Yeah. On the corner, that's how we bring people in.
Rain or shine.
Every Redeemer Lutheran Church in their
stop
little
the
gym area.
Stop the traffic, say, you get out.
Every red light, we pull
you
up.
You guys
wow.
the car.
Are just amazing. And it's the annual Spring Luncheon Performance and Fashion Show, Choral Airs, Chorists. You're going to host this Everyone's a Winner event, and it's happening at Drury Lane this Saturday. For tickets and information, you can go to choralairs.com.
Right, correct. Yeah.
Also,
are tickets still available? Yeah. There'll be about 600-700 people there.
We have some great
nice.
Raffle prizes that we're also selling raffle tickets for, and you don't have to be present to win, so check it out on the website, and you can be a winner.
Oh,
there's
beautiful.
Cash.
Wow. People like the cash,
there's
Wendy.
More.
Oh, right.
All right, directors Bonnie Fedeschi, Amy Brinkman, and all you lovely ladies, continued success, and we hope to have you back sometime.
Thank
you.
Thanks.
So absolutely. We'd
good
love
luck, everybody.
To have you. Thank you.
A quick break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Thank you, Steve.
Life, I love
all right, I'm a little embarrassed about our next guest. Bill, you did something to be funny, and it turned out to be a gold mine.
Yes, it did, didn't it? Who knew? Several months ago, during a crosstalk with Steve Cochran's show, a phrase came up. Payback is a, and the word that is normally used is not a very polite word, right? It's used to describe usually a female dog. Or something similar. But,
know the word.
Everybody on staff here, when we heard the phrase "payback is a," we all, led by a friend Steve in the newsroom, said a Wendy. Payback is a Wendy. So I said to myself, "Boy, that sounds like a T-shirt idea." So the people of Rags of Honor and David Hochberg said, "Let's do that. Let's make a T-shirt out of this." We did this covertly. I didn't want you to know about it because I gave you one and Kevin one as a Christmas present. And then listeners said, we would like a T-shirt that said Payback is a Wendy with a very angry picture of you, Wendy, on the T-shirt. So we had a bunch of them printed up, and we've been giving them to listeners.
But you kind of have to work for them, and I believe Joe Mendola was the first listener we gave one to. And
yeah.
Joe, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Now, you called to get a T-shirt, and what would you do with this Payback is a Wendy T-shirt? What did you tell us you were going to do?
Well, we're doing races all over the country, and I said I'd take a picture in front of different state signs and, you know, on my road trip.
Well, you know what? You've delivered. There is you have a Twitter account, and what is it? What is the hashtag on it?
Payback is a Wendy.
Yep, that's right.
And I have seen pictures of you wearing my shirt next to the Fonz.
Yeah, that's in downtown Milwaukee. That's my home city.
Not Henry Winkler, but it's the bronze Fonz.
The bronzy?
Yeah, the bronzy.
Yeah, it's not actually him.
It's a statue of him.
All right, so you were whining a little bit that we only had extra large, and you took a picture of yourself in it. It did look a little big, and then what did your wife, like, stitch it up and make it fit you better?
Yeah, she shortened it, and then she kind of
just like our show
a little bit. Yeah.
Well, we just wanted to have you on because I thought it was pretty funny and yet pretty silly. But I think it's hashtag payback Wendy road trip. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
And
I think when I tweet, I write payback is a Wendy or something like that.
Yes, you do. And there's a picture of you. You did a bunch of marathons. Now, obviously, you're a runner. How many marathons have you done on this little cross-country trek?
Well, I wish you guys had that shirt last year. Last year we did 33 different states.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. We were running like every other weekend, sometimes back-to-back weekends. I started out doing the marathons, but then around my 29th marathon, my body gave out, and I switched to the half.
Yeah, but I don't
blame
you.
I'm still happy doing the half.
That's still a challenge. People who don't know, that's tough. You know, not everybody can do even the half marathons. So 33 last year, and so far this year, how many for you, Joe?
I think we did around 4 this year.
All right. Not bad at all.
That's 4 more than I've done in my whole life.
Yep.
Yeah, in April we'll be doing back-to-back marathons, half marathons, and then we'll be up to 49, I believe, and then we have a stretch, and then in September we're going to Kauai. And I'll do the full marathon in Kauai because I'll probably never go back.
That's when I think I should go with you instead of the T-shirt.
I'll tell you what, the way I started was back in 2010, I was like 90 pounds heavier. And I saw those guys on The Biggest Loser, and I saw those guys doing an Ironman. And I told my wife, I said, if those guys can do it, I can do it. So I started in January training, and then in September I did a full triathlon in Sandusky, Ohio.
That's tremendous. And they always say for the training, I don't know if this held true for you, Joe, but they say when you're training for these things, the best thing to do is run for a mile, then walk for a mile, then run, then walk, alternate. Is that what you did?
No, I really didn't know, have any idea what I was doing.
You just ran it, right?
I just ran, and of course I got injured running at first. So then I switched to swimming because swimming's a big part of the triathlon. And I started swimming like every day at one of the local pools here. And I'd swim like an hour doing laps. And I tell you what, people thought I was lifting weights again because I put on so much muscle.
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
And then the bicycle riding is the third, right? It's running and swimming and bike riding, correct?
Yeah. For the full triathlon, it's a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and a marathon, 26.2 miles.
I could tell you right now, I could maybe do the running and the biking. I could never swim that far. That's really
fun. I thought the swimming would be easy until I got in the pool and started swimming.
It takes a lot out of you.
I look like a baby taking a bath, you know.
And when people see the Wendy T-shirt, the Payback is a Wendy shirt, what is the reaction you get from people, Joe? Are they afraid?
They should be.
That's our goal.
I don't get any reaction.
No reaction at all.
Probably shock. Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. My wife won't let me walk around in public with it because she says I kind of look like a homeless guy. So I just put the shirt on for the picture.
For the picture. That's all right, fine, man. You know what? Your wife is a smart woman, but wait till she sees the Payback as a Wendy Speedo that we're going to get you for your triathlon.
I'll wear it, too.
Good.
All right. Well, Joe, where are you now? You're in Milwaukee, and where are you headed next?
Next, we're headed to Cambridge, Maryland on April 8th.
Well, have a good trip. We just wanted to say hello and thank you for promoting it. I think next batch we should get WJN put on there somewhere because we don't have that. But if you want to follow Joe Mendola, it's Payback Wendy Road Trip at Payback Wendy Road Trip on Twitter. Have fun and stay safe.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Joe. Take care of yourself.
See, he worked hard for
Joe
that
Joe Mendola.
Shirt.
He sure did. He's working hard. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Those are two separate shows, Wendy.
I know.
Those are two completely different entities.
Hey, thanks to Ben Cortez, who worked the sound for those lovely ladies.
Yep.
They just took a little jaunt past Abe Lincoln out in the courtyard here.
The big statue of Abe Lincoln. Not the actual Abe Lincoln, of course, but the statue.
All right, I don't know. Oh, okay. We have somebody we can talk to right now. Something interesting in the news. Remember Colin Kaepernick?
The 49ers quarterback who would refuse to stand or acknowledge the national anthem.
That might be changing. And on the line with us right now, ABC News correspondent Alex Stone. Hi, Alex.
Hey, guys, yeah, and according to sources who are talking to our partners over at ESPN, they say that he now says that he is going to stand during the national anthem, but this may be a bit of a sales pitch for a team to pick him up because he is opting out of his contract with the 49ers and becoming a free agent next week. He'll officially be a free agent, so he's looking for a team, but he says that he achieved what he wanted to achieve, that he thinks continuing to do it will detract from the positive change that has been created. Remember, this was all about social inequality and police violence against the African-American community that he claimed was going on. And now he says that a lot of people are talking about it. There was a lot of focus on it. He doesn't feel that he needs to take a knee or to sit during the anthem anymore.
If I remember right, he may have been the first one, Alex, but he wasn't the only player in professional sports to do this. Other people followed, correct?
They definitely did. In the NFL, in the NBA, in high school sports, a lot of high school kids started doing it because of the message that they wanted to get across, maybe also because they saw their idols doing it as well. But there were quite a few folks who took part in this, and that, according to sources, that is part of why he has decided that he can go back to standing during the anthem, that he feels like that the message is being carried on by other people at this point, and that he doesn't need to do it anymore, and he doesn't want the talk to be about that. There was a lot more that he did other than just deciding not to stand during the anthem. He donated a whole lot of money over 10 months, $100,000 spread out over a bunch of different charitable organizations. His foundation gave $1 million to community organizations. There were all kinds of things that he and his foundation were doing. In fact, he got a big award, the biggest award that the 49ers have. He got it last year, despite all of the controversy, for everything that he had been doing in the community. And he says he feels like he has done well.
All right, because I was going to ask you who he was getting the message out, but what has changed? He single-handedly is trying to make these changes. And it's interesting that being a free agent, because I always wondered why the 49ers weren't kind of saying, hey, dude, you're representing us, and we don't think that's cool. But now a new team might be getting him, so now it's interesting you say that's why he might be saying, I'm done with this, I'm going to stand.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know. He says it's for the social aspect of it, but it's coming at the same time that he's becoming a free agent right now. There's no way to really know.
Right.
And maybe it has nothing to do with becoming a free agent at the same time. The Niners seem to be behind him. They matched a $1 million contribution for all of the money that he was giving. They gave him that award last year. They backed him up through all of this, even though in that first game we were there covering it, and he became the backup quarterback very quickly. But they said that was completely because of, and then he became the primary quarterback not long after that. But they said it was totally based on-field performance and not anything that was going on outside of the stadium. But the team, by all accounts and by everything that they have said publicly, what we know privately, that they backed him up through this entire thing and said that they would support him and they were giving money toward his organization.
Alex, teammates were primarily on Colin Kaepernick's side, but what about management and what about ownership? Had they commented on his beliefs and if they were behind him or not?
Yeah, they've at least publicly, they say that they were behind him and that they support him and they supported what he was doing. And I remember going back to, would he be fined? Would he be penalized? And the team said no, that when it comes to national anthem, a player can do whatever they want to do during that time. It's freedom of their expression, that there's nothing saying they have to stand for the anthem. And if they don't want to, the team wasn't going to and couldn't penalize him, and the league couldn't penalize him either. The team seemed like they were perfectly okay with it. Fans, there were mixed emotions, but it seemed like a lot of the fans just didn't think he was a very good quarterback and would bash him for that, thinking that he could have done a whole lot better. Last season, things didn't go so well. The Niners have had a rough time the last couple of seasons. So there are a lot of fans who just say that they want something else in terms of a leader on the field, but if it's because of what he was doing when it came to the national anthem, a lot of the fans, when we talked to them, would say, he can do whatever he wants to do. Fans from other teams seem to have a lot of problems with it. Folks in the Bay Area didn't seem to.
It's always interesting when a quarterback refuses to do something. Here in Chicago, we had a guy, Jay Cutler, who refused to throw complete passes.
Don't you hate that?
Yes. Very upsetting.
Although it's funny because, Alex, you just said, you know, fans just didn't think he was doing a good job, so they would bash him. That's right. We're fans that bash our players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
That's how it is.
Will some other guy, do you think, pick up this particular taking a knee, or do you think it's over and done with in the NFL?
Well, yeah, there are other players who have been doing it, and we don't know what they're going to do. And publicly, Kaepernick hasn't said. This is, again, his buddies, those close to him, apparently, who are speaking to ESPN. That other members of the NFL and the NBA and other sports may decide to continue on, or they may take his guidance here and say, okay, he's not doing it. He started it. He's not doing it. We're not going to do it any longer either. We don't know. We'll have to see come August what begins happening.
And Alex, just so I'm clear on this, because I'm not sure I understand this, it's his decision to not pick up this option year, right? As far as the 49ers are concerned, they would keep him from another year. It's up to him to decide to opt out.
Yeah, he's opting out right now. It was up to him. The team said they wanted him to stay for the final year.
Yeah.
And he's saying that he wants to become a free agent next year.
Huh. How about that? Well, we appreciate it, Alex. Thanks so much for keeping us up to date on this.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
That's
have a good
Alex
day.
Stone.
You too, Alex.
Absolutely. Alex Stone of ABC News. Wendy, I play this song for you because Babalu was the brother of Matty Lou and Philippe Lou, baseball's greatest brothers. But also, today would have been Desi Arnaz's 100th birthday.
100?
Desi
I thought
Arnaz,
he would have been older.
No, he'd be 100 if he was still around. I guess it's still his 100th birthday,
good
regardless.
Man. Pretty amazing, though, because he did seem like an old guy when we watched
him. Didn't
he?
Yeah.
And he would have been in his 30s then, early 40s?
Yeah.
I think that should be our new theme song.
The Babalu song?
Yeah.
I'm all right
it's
with that.
It's just weird enough to work for
it's
us.
It's fun, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So happy birthday, Desi Arnaz. We wish you were still with us. Steve doesn't. Steve, you hold a grudge on
Desi
Arnaz?
No, it'd just
Desi
be
Arnaz?
Hard to keep a conversation going, I think.
With
if he
Desi?
Was still with us.
Yeah.
The accent, the age.
Yeah.
Lucy!
I like that she could fool him, Lucy could fool him, just by wearing a fake mustache. That's all it took to fool her husband. Like, if you came home wearing a fake mustache, Jim would probably go,
I went.
Why are you wearing a fake mustache?
Right.
But it always fooled him.
It's because they never spent the night together.
No.
Right?
Well,
no,
they spent the night together, but in separate
right.
beds.
Oh. And, you know, I'm half Italian, so Jim wouldn't even notice if I wore the fake mustache. It's
been a few days.
What's for dinner, Wendy? Hey, I'm wearing
that's a
fake a mustache. Come on. Nothing? I get nothing?
That's fun to make fun of yourself. It really is.
You know, I just read the other day, I don't remember, you know why I was reading about this? Because of David Cassidy's situation.
Yes.
About his dementia. So I'm reading about his dad. His dad was an actor named Jack Cassidy. And his dad died.
Wasn't he?
When you think about Jack Cassidy, how old is Jack Cassidy in your head when you think about him?
46.
All right. He died at 49, but in my head, he's much, much, I mean, I know he didn't live long, but he's way old. I mean, I've outlived Jack Cassidy, and that doesn't seem possible because in my head, he's a much older guy.
Yeah, but he died very young.
He died 49, yeah.
To be in your brain sometimes
you don't want to be in there. It's much, you know what it's like is like the warehouse in Indiana Jones. There's just boxes of stuff piled up.
Yeah, but a lot of toys.
There'd be a lot of toys and candy.
Yep. Oh, here are my shrinky dinks.
Right. You hear that? That's the sound that is often heard in my brain. Often. All right. This is crazy. We've had John Caparulo on the show twice. John's a very funny comedian. He used to be a regular on Chelsea Lately. Nice guy. Family guy. Has a wife. Has a young daughter. So John is performing last weekend at the Comedy and Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, which is a really nice comedy club.
Comedy and magic?
They call it comedy and magic. It is, when you go to see shows there, it's primarily comedy, but every once in a while, there is a magician on the bill.
Not always, but sometimes it is.
But it's a great club. So he's doing a show, John Caparulo is, and everything is going according to plan. He's doing well, and if you want to see more of this, it's available everywhere on the internet. We cannot play any clips from it because John
is a dirty birdie.
He's swearing quite a bit to enhance his comedy. And then things get crazy. He does a joke. He's talking about Washington, D.C., that he was just in Washington, D.C. And he talks about the Washington Monument and who designed the Washington Monument. And he compares it to, he goes, I don't know, I can't believe somebody got paid for this, because when you look at the Washington Monument, it just looks like you're looking at a white phallic symbol. He says it in a different way, right, but that's what he's inferring. And then he said, and I don't think they would have built a building like that for Washington. They're saving that one for Trump. That's the joke. The audience enjoys it, mostly. One lady does not enjoy it. She's sitting up front, not even a little bit. So she gets up. John's on stage. She's in the front row. She gets up and starts swearing at John and leaving, right? And then he gets a little boisterous back.
And says, go ahead and leave. And he's swearing at her, too.
Right. He's swearing at her. She's swearing at him. The audience
That's the magic.
Right. That's the magic of the Comedy and Magic Club, is you can swear at a perfect stranger. It's magic. Something happens that I don't think anyone really wanted to have happen. She picks up a large glass. It looks like a beer mug. And she's not far from him. At that point, she's about 10 or 12 feet away and hurls it as hard as she can at John and hits him in the stomach. And I don't know if you saw this, but I watched it a few times. It breaks. The glass breaks.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And he in the crowd then is not sure what to make of this. She continues to leave. He's going to pick up, there's like a bar stool next to him, and he's, I hope, kidding, because he picks it up like he's going to throw it at her in the audience, which would not have been a good move.
But he thought better of it and didn't do it. And I think he was just, I'm hoping, he was just pretending.
I think because he was not, when you're a stand-up comic, you're going to have nights where there might be some back and forth between yourself and somebody in the audience, but very rare is it when they pick up something and whip it at you and hit you with it.
And technically, she should be charged for that.
That's assault.
Yeah.
That is definitely assault. So so then it gets awkward because she leaves, and then he has to, as he points out, now I have to continue doing comedy when you just saw a man assaulted on stage. A woman whipped a glass at him and hit him in the stomach.
And then the audience turns on her and said she was acting like a witch all night anyway.
Yeah.
So it just turned into everybody kind of...
It's a grape session at that point.
It was, but my thought was, first of all, no heckling.
You shouldn't, but it does happen.
It does. I was bad when I first started going to comedy clubs. I just thought you could participate.
Now, how? Because you've told me this before. You would go to the Comedy Woman Lions, and you would heckle.
I would heckle, but there were some people that, you know, they'd want you to say like a catchphrase or something.
Sure.
I can't remember the guy's name.
Bill Kras.
No, but I think it was Bill Hudson.
Oh, no, not you, Bill. Right, that was his thing.
So he'd go on stage and you'd participate, so then you'd think Bob Odenkirk then goes up there and you're like, you can play along.
You can yell stuff.
I learned like after maybe twice going there, because my girlfriend Carla Felicia, who was doing stand-up, said, if you want to come with me, don't ever say another word again unless you're on stage.
Most comics, although they want some participation, heckling is a different story.
Yeah, it wasn't really heckling. I was just participating.
Right.
But I learned to not do that again.
Yeah.
So you being a comic for all those years, people do that, and you should acknowledge it and say something back.
You almost have to.
Typically, do you swear at that person?
No, I never did that, ever.
Do a lot of people do that? Because that's what I think really sparked her up, and I'm thinking if she was there with a guy.
Yeah.
He was saying some pretty mean things to her, and I imagine if she was with a husband or a boyfriend that he would want to go up on stage and punch that guy.
Yeah, you don't see any, wherever this woman was sitting, she was sitting up front, she almost appeared to be by herself because nobody else reacted at that table. Nobody went after John Caparulo, nobody left with the woman who left. So I don't know, maybe she was just there by herself. I don't know, it's possible, I guess. But it got very tense in the room.
It's very uncomfortable to watch, I gotta tell you. I mean, it is. And again, you're never gonna change anybody's mind with politics or religion.
Right.
Definitely not politics. But
don't you think today, if you went to any comedy show at the Improv, at Zany's, you picked the club, wouldn't you assume today being the way today is, you're more than likely gonna get at least one, if not all three or four of the comics doing some political material.
Yeah, because that's what everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
That's a topical comic.
So maybe when you go, all right, that's going to be part of the evening. Somebody's either going to
support Donald Trump. And there are plenty of comics out there. Bill Burr is a very funny comic who is so pro-Trump and talks about him a lot very favorably through his act. So you know when you go in, that's going to be part of the evening.
Right.
Is they're probably going to discuss Trump in some way, shape, or form, or politics.
I don't think people who are going to a comedy club are thinking about what they're going to.
I think maybe. They're
just going to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it really was very uncomfortable to watch.
Boy.
I mean, really.
Oh, boy. One time when I was doing stand-up in Peoria, there's a place called the Main Street Barn Grill in Peoria that used to do stand-up. They don't anymore. I used to do stuff with the crowd a lot. I would mess with the crowd. I would never be excessive. Like if I thought somebody didn't want to be a part of that, I would leave them alone. But there were plenty of people that did. So I would do that stuff. And there was a guy who seemed to be having a good time at this club in Peoria. And after a few minutes, and the crowd was loving it, I wasn't being excessively mean, just pointing some things out. And he walked toward the stage, and you hear everybody go, uh-oh, like that. And he did that thing with his finger, like, come here, I want to tell you a secret.
You didn't go
so
up to the him,
bent,
did you?
Yeah.
He could have punched you.
And he explained to me that that part of the show was over. He goes, the part of the show where you talk about me is over. And then he went and he sat down.
So
he was right.
Okay, so what do you come back and say?
I said, he just told me a secret. And everybody goes, what's the secret? I go, it wouldn't be a secret if I told you.
That's a good out.
But I left him alone then. There's a video of a comic 2 or 3 years ago, and I don't remember his name, but he was what they call a guitar act. You know, he would bring the guitar out with him and sing song, do comedy, but also play the guitar. And somebody started heckling him, and it got pretty heated. And the guy charged him on stage, and this comic took his guitar and hit him over the head with the guitar. It's all on videotape.
All right, well, I hope he was charged, because you can't do that.
You can't do that. No. There should be almost no physical interaction between the comic and the audience.
You know, I mean, just both people are wrong in this whole situation, because she shouldn't have jumped up and swore at him in the middle of his act
right.
for what he said.
Right.
You know what? If you don't like what a comic says, don't laugh.
There's always the option. I know this sounds extreme, but people leave sometimes
yeah.
if they're not happy with the content.
Or if they're offended.
I've seen people leave.
That's what they should do.
Right. Yeah.
They
but
shouldn't take down the whole show.
Right. That's kind of what that lady did. So she's in the wrong, but I think John, and I wouldn't be embarrassed to tell him this, and I think he'd even admit to it, it could have been handled a little bit more delicately.
He seemed to escalate the situation more.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you can't ignore it, and I've never been on stage when people have, well, I have, but not doing stand-up.
Right.
And, you know, you got to acknowledge it. You can't ignore it.
Right.
But I don't know if he took it the right way.
You know how politicians, a lot of times they'll come into some place and they'll be booed. People will boo them, and their answer is to wave and smile.
That's terrible.
That doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't work.
I don't hear you.
Right. Right. All right. What are your thoughts on this? Some calls are lining up. We're 312-981-7200. What do you make of all this? It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy. We were talking about John Caparulo.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name?
John Caparulo, yes.
He was at a comedy club that has a funny name.
That's the Comedy and Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, California. A really, really nice club.
Doing some material. He does a joke about Donald Trump. A woman in the audience doesn't agree, kind of says swear words at him.
Mm-hmm.
And they get into a fight, basically, and she whips a big glass at him on stage.
He suggests a sexual act to the woman.
Yeah.
That she could do, which is, again, a little bit on the excessive side.
That's what I mean. Had she been with a significant other,
yeah,
that guy would have gone up on stage and punched John.
There's a chance of that. Yeah.
Because it was really, you know,
right.
meaner than what she said.
Every part of it probably could have been handled better on her side and on his side.
Agreed. All right. Mark's on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hey, no, very similarly, I was at an event with John Calise. He was in town, and he was making some jokes. Some people were talking about Trump, you know, and there were several women that were in the audience, and they got up, and they were right in his eyesight. He didn't address them. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't saying anything to him, but expressing his own opinion about Trump, and there was like two or three people that got up and flipped him off, you know, made it public where they're flipping him off. And he's like, oh, okay, you know, that's nice. Make sure that they get their money back when they leave, you know.
That's a good way of handling
that's
it.
That's a very good way of handling it. Was the crowd pretty much on his side? They must have been at that point, right?
I mean, people were laughing. I mean, it was, you know, political humor. And either you are there and you realize everything's going to be, like, free game. It's what's going to happen, and you're going to be open to that. And if you're going to take it personally, then maybe you shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be out in public, you know, if you're going to be that sensitive over it.
So makes sense. Yep.
It is what it is. But I was, like, really surprised that you know, you're talking about adults that are going to get, you know, that incensed over something like that.
Just walk out.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you for calling. We appreciate it.
Oh, good conversation.
Thank you. Here's what's strange about that. If you're going to see somebody like John Cleese, who's a name, those people probably liked John Cleese. Why would you spend that kind of money to go see somebody if you didn't like them? And even if he says something you don't agree with, you just go, all right, but the rest of the evening is going to be him talking about his life and his career and stuff. I'll just take it in for a minute or two.
There's people you talk to at the office that they say something that you don't really agree with, and instead of getting in a fight, you just kind of go, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, you want to go get a pizza for lunch?
Yeah.
You know, you just move on.
Right.
All right, and Rick wants to talk. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Good, good. I was at a show last year at Zany's out in St. Charles. It was Gilbert Gottfried.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy had to be the most unpolitically correct guy on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and it was hilarious. I mean, it was, if you looked at it, took it seriously, yes, he was one of the meanest guys out there. He just insulted everybody. But that's the way that's his show.
Sure.
You know what to expect when you're going to see him.
Right, right. I mean, it was hilarious. We were all rolling, but it's just that, you know, it's comedy. People go to these shows. If you're worried about what somebody's going to say, don't go. You know, it's comedy. It's what it is.
I always looked at a comedy club as it's almost equivalent of looking into a funhouse mirror. So there's going to be reality, but it's going to be bent out of shape a little bit. And you have to accept that or the night's not going to work for you.
Right, right. And it was a hilarious show. He was very seen at times, but that's the way he is.
Yeah.
You know? It's what it is. If you don't like it, don't go.
Well,
you know,
Rick, I think we're going to have Gilbert Gottfried on the show in the next week or so.
I don't think next week, but toward the end of the month, I think.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
All right, so stay tuned for that. Rick, thank you for calling. And you told me about this documentary that Gilbert's involved in, and it sounds amazing.
It was nominated the other night for an Academy Award. It's called Life Animated, and Gilbert plays a pretty big role in this.
Should I give the concept of
it?
Or,
it's interesting.
At 3 years old, a chatty, energetic little boy named Owen Suskind ceased to speak, disappearing into autism with apparently no way out. 4 years passed. The only stimuli that engaged Owen were Disney films.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Then one day his father donned a puppet, which was the wisecracking parrot from Aladdin that was voiced by Gilbert Gottfried. And I guess Gilbert Gottfried comes in and meets this boy. So that's the one time the boy can make the connection between, like, wow, that's a cartoon voice, but there's a real person behind it.
Right.
And I can't wait to see this.
It helped this kid's development overwhelmingly, because all of a sudden he was able to make the bridge from what's animated into what life really is. And I've not seen it yet. I've heard amazing things about it. And when Gilbert's on, we can certainly talk to him about it.
Okay. We'll look for that. It's called Life Animated. And we're going to do a press conference at 3 o'clock with Jeff Sessions.
We do crosstalk with Jeff Sessions?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
That will be fun. So we'll say hello to Ro and Anna right now, and then I think we're going to go right through it, or to it, rather. It's WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Ro and Anna are here. You got a couple minutes to tell us what's coming up before Jeff Sessions starts speaking.
Well, Jeff Sessions is coming up.
Oh,
all right,
got
there
him?
You go.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent.
Him. And actually, we're going to have a highly placed Republican congressman, Congressman Roskam, join us right afterwards, his reaction to that. We're also going to hear from former Ambassador Bruce Hayman about this whole issue of dealing with ambassadors and State Department issues as they pertain to all of this, too. Like, if you do have contact, if a congressman has contact with an ambassador, you know, we're being told they have them all the time. What is that all about? But even beyond that, it's really an issue of when you're having a contact with the Russian ambassador, that's not just like having any ambassador. If it's the Russian or the Chinese ambassador, or if it's, you know, I mean, the ambassador to Guatemala is a lovely woman. I don't know, but I'm certain that that's, you know, you're like, oh,
falls
yeah.
in a different category.
Right. Oh, yeah, oh, that's very nice. You know, it's like when you meet somebody who has, you know, the, until 2016, Russia was still considered a strategic adversary of the United States. Then all of a sudden they became our best friends.